Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. This is John Fugelsang. The show is broadcasting this week out of New York City, y'all. It's a whole different Steph Miller Show. Steph's in France. I am filling in for her for the week. I'm delighted to be here with you, along with, for today at least, Mr. Chris Livoy in the drawing studio. Hi, we are by today, Chris.
Yes, we are.
Or maybe just confused.
And, a little of both.
What a week we have. It's a great day to be an American. It's a great day to be a union thug. Not the greatest day to be Barack Obama, but then again, when was it? And what a week we have. I'm so excited to be filling in this week, Chris. We're going to have Chris Hayes of The Nation and MSNBC.
Yeah, he's all over MSNBC.
He's all over MSNBC. He has a new series he's going to be hosting on Sunday mornings that I get a test show of this weekend with him.
Oh, nice.
And he's going to come join us. We're going to have The Onion's Bartende Thurston, who's a hilarious comic and a great African-American writer, and he's one of the editors of The Onion. Comedians like Eddie Brill and Elaine Boozler, Harris Zafar of Muslims for Peace, Robert Scheer is going to be here of the San Francisco Chronicle. Today alone, Chris, we have Charlie Pierce of the Boston Globe.
Yep.
We have Jamie Kilstein, one of the funniest and edgiest political comics I've ever known. Have you ever heard Jamie Kilstein before?
I don't think so.
I hope you survive the broadcast. He's a complete lunatic. Kareth Foster is joining us. She was Imus's African-American female sidekick after he got in trouble.
Oh.
And she's a terrific New York. I'm inviting all my favorite New York comedians in for the week. Jim David, who's a New York comedy legend and one of my favorite LBGT comics, is joining us, as well as The Rude Pundit and Tina Dupuy of Crooks and Liars. It's going to be so much fun.
And tomorrow marks the return of Hal Sparks from
comes back.
From Scotland. That's right.
Yes, Hal has been gone for a long, long time. We missed him on the Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Tour, and he's going to be rejoining the show tomorrow with me. He'll be there in the Burbank studio. And then he's rejoining our tour, the Sexy Liberal Comedy Show, in East Lansing, Michigan,
right,
on Saturday the 17th, which is our next show. It's a fundraiser for the Clinton County Democratic Party. It's the first time we've ever done anything for the Democratic Party. It's the first time I've ever done a fundraiser for Democrats. I'm a little bit nervous
really?
About it.
Really?
Yeah, because I'm not one of the members. I'm not
That's
in the party.
Right. That's right.
I'm
you're in one of those. You're in one of those fancy New York parties that they're allowed to have.
Yes, I am. I'm in the green party. And no, I'm actually independent, and
okay.
I think that's the case with I would guess everyone listening to this show right now probably falls into independent or Democrat or green or conservative who just wants to get off on hate. And we love you.
Yes.
So please do call in at 1-800-STEPH-12. But no, our next show is going to be in East Lansing, so we're going to be promoting that and getting the word out because, hey, if the Democrats want to be in business with Stephanie Miller, I'd be happy to enable that unholy union. So a lot going on. Muammar Gaddafi's got a great big convoy. The Kardashians, of course, is always exciting.
Really?
If you want to watch a once Olympic great be emasculated every day on reality television, yeah.
He really is one of those people that looks like an old lesbian.
Can we talk about this for a second? I don't want to make fun of the man's looks. However, they're not exactly his looks anymore.
No, they're not. He doesn't look like Bruce Jenner.
No, he doesn't. He looks like a shiny spinning image doll of Bruce Jenner. And it's really, really sad to watch this woman, Kris Jenner, be like his emotional moil every day and just cut his manhood off constantly.
Yeah.
And now she's going to change her name to Kardashian. She's taking the name of the man she divorced, who's now dead, for marketing reasons. So it's a healthy show.
Yeah.
We can just start referring to Kim Kardashian as future cosmetics infomercial spokeswoman, Kim Kardashian.
Let's do that. Yeah.
All right. So there's a lot going on here. I'm going to get coffee this morning, and I'm in the place, and the guy goes, you know who you look like? And I always get Kyle MacLachlan, Matthew Broderick, half the guys on Friends, or Katie Lang. I'm used to it. You know?
Okay.
And
right.
Goes, Charlie Sheen.
What?
Oh, not winning. Yes, I look like Charlie Sheen now.
What?
I look like Charlie Sheen.
No, you do not.
I'm like, you can tell I did that much meth this weekend as a show? So I'm glad I'm on the radio, if that's the case. And I want to talk about, we're going to talk about this all day long, but let's just get it out of the gate. We have time here. Mr. Jimmy Hoffa Jr. Was speaking yesterday, introducing the president, which is what makes it really outrageous. And Jimmy Hoffa did something that no person should ever do. He spoke with language reserved for AM right-wing radio hosts.
Yes.
That's what he did. You know what he said? He said we should take out members of Congress
No, he didn't say that. He said we should bring guns to town hall meetings. No, he didn't say that. He said we need Second Amendment remedies. Actually, no, he didn't say that. Could you have a card to play what he played, what he said?
Yeah, the Please. Actual one that he said?
Yeah, let's, okay. Well, first let's hear what Fox News told us, he said.
Okay, here we go.
Election. I should note as well that some of the union officials, the labor crowd, the president also trying to rev up his political operation heading into 2012. The Teamster president, Jimmy Hoffa Jr., was speaking a couple moments ago and saying, we'll remember in November who's with the working people. He was chiding Republicans, specifically named the Tea Party, and then his language got a lot stronger, and pardon my language as I repeat it, but he said of the Tea Party and Republicans, quote, let's take these sons of bitches out. He got some cheers from this crowd here in Detroit. I'm assuming the president's rhetoric will not be quite as harsh.
I just want to make sure we understand. Who exactly said that, and it was basically in connection with opening remarks to the president?
This is Jimmy Hoffa Jr., the Teamsters president. He spoke maybe 5 or 10 minutes ago, warming up before the president. The president arrived in Detroit already, but was not here on site when Jimmy Hoffa Jr. made those comments. We should be very clear about that. But nonetheless, he's part of the official program here, leading into the president, trying to fire up the crowd. Pretty tough, tough rhetoric, obviously.
Speaking about the Tea Party, the quote was...
Well, the sentence before that was he was talking about Republicans and the Tea Party and saying that he said something like, we'll remember in November who's with working people. But then specifically said, right. quote, let's take these sons of bitches out.
Hateful.
Yeah.
Hateful.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's horrible. He wants to take out the Tea Party. Does he want to put rifle scopes on posters or surveying symbols? No. So I was pretty appalled to hear this. I mean, how dare he use this kind of language that AM radio show hosts use, right?
We got to keep an eye on the battle that we face, a war on workers. And you see it everywhere. It is the Tea Party. And you know, there's only one way to beat and win that war. The one thing about working people is we like a good fight. And you know what? They got a war. They got a war with us. And there's only going to be one winner. It's going to be the workers of Michigan and America. We're going to win that war.
Yeah.
Right?
President Obama, this is your army. We are ready to march. Let's take these son of a bitches out
what?
And give America back to America where we belong.
Wait.
Thank you very much.
But wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
That's not exactly what he said.
Yeah, it almost sounds like there was a little hiccup there in the audio.
Yeah, here is the unedited audio.
You mean something was missing? What was the full context?
Everybody here's got a vote. If we go back and we keep the eye on the prize, let's take these son of a bitches out and give America back to America where we belong. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
So by taking these sons of bitches out, you mean go out to the ballot box.
Everybody's got to vote. He was encouraging people to
vote
and take them out non-violently through the electoral process. How dare he?
Leave it to Fox News to edit out the voting part and make you make up your mind yourself as to what take these sons of bitches out mean.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you want to have a good time, go on to Twitter today, kids, and search the word Hoffa and see how the right wing tried so hard all day yesterday. Ari Fleischer, right now, one of the top tweets, if you search Hoffa, no coverage of Hoffa FSOB line in print editions of the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, or Washington Post. I guess calls for civility travel a one-way street. Joe Scarborough said Obama should call out the violent rhetoric of Jimmy Hoffa Jr. He's talking about voting, my friends, and they're going crazy all over it. DNC chair avoids Hoffa war call. Jimmy Hoffa's talking exactly the way we want to hear the president talk.
That's right.
Exactly the way we want to hear the Democratic Party talk. Exactly the way Bernie Sanders talks and very few else can do. Dana Lash, my old friend from the Joy Behar Show, amused by how Soros crowd still pushes the Fox doctored narrative after Hoffa admits and doubles down. You just heard the whole quote, folks. He didn't actually call anyone to take anyone out through any means other than the legal, nonviolent way afforded us at the ballot box.
But the way Fox News edited it made it sound like he was calling for violence.
Exactly.
That is shoddy journalism.
And I expect more from Fox, except I don't. So I'm not really surprised by any of it. And this is going to be the scandal du jour of the day. Mm-hmm. And they're going to demand that Barack Obama, and you watch, the right wing will keep it up, and they will demand that Barack Obama condemn Jimmy Hoffa's statements. Don't fall for it, folks. He was talking about voting, yep. And that's what they hate. That's what they hate more than anything else. This goes back so many years to voter suppression of poor people, of working folks, of minorities. You know, it's just over 20 years now that George Bush Sr. vetoed the Motor Voter Bill, which was the coolest idea ever in the 80s, that when you went to get your driver's license, you were automatically registered to vote. That's direct democracy, right? I mean, you're right there. It makes it easy. George Bush vetoed the bill as president, saying that in a free society, you can't force people to vote, which was a lie. It wasn't forcing anybody to vote. Nope. It was registering them.
Yeah.
So they do anything they can to keep people from voting, and that's why it's especially bitter, because Jimmy Hoffa was out there talking about one thing, using the ballot box for labor. And I'll tell you something, the only hope this republic has is if people wake up and force Barack Obama to be the candidate he ran as. We love Obama here on the show. We criticize him because we love him. If my brother had a bad habit, I'd try to alert him to it as well. And so we're going to talk about this all day long. We're going to talk about the war on the left between people who want to defend anything Obama does, people who think anytime you criticize Obama at all, you're voting for Republicans, and those of us who think that we want to honor what Barack Obama asked us to do at Netroots Nation 2010 when he said, hold my feet to the fire, keep on my case. Some of us criticize Obama because we want to see him get reelected. The Tea Party is proven if the people lead, the leaders will follow. And I'd like to see the left start acting that way.
Yep.
There we go.
All right.
Is it time for break?
Yeah, well, let's take a break right now.
All right. Thank you very much, sir. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang. We've got your calls coming up at 1-800-STEP-12.
For a good time, call now. 1-800-STEP-12.
Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller.
It's Lady Gaga. I'm auditioning to be Lord Gaga at the Manor. This is John Fugelsang on the Stephanie Miller Show, coming to you today from Nueva York. And we are broadcasting live from Times Square and from Burbank, California, with Chris in the West Coast Bureau. Good morning,
hiya.
Chris. Hiya. Hiya, hiya. So lots to go through. First off, it's a great, great time to be a fan of political humor, because we've got, well, I'll get to Michelle Bachmann in a second, but first there's Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin is toying with the idea of toying with the hopes and dreams of her followers even more, so they'll donate to her PAC and she can buy more toys. Sarah Palin's never going to run for president. We all know this, right? I mean, do you know this, Chris?
Yeah, I do. She's not going to. She's not going to rake in as much money as she would otherwise.
Exactly. Spider-Man will be running next year on Broadway. Sarah Palin will not.
That's right.
And even Dick Cheney threw her under the bus this weekend when he said, I'm still not satisfied with why she left the governor's office.
Yep.
Finally, the one conservative voice of reason, the one voice in the entire Republican Party to come out and say, hello, the lady quit her job because she felt like it, and it's Dick Cheney. That's the voice of morality and moderation in the party when it comes to Palin. And that's pretty much as clear a sign as you need. If you need a clearer sign, look at the fact that Fox News is still paying her lamestream media salary.
That's right.
Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich both had to stop taking their pay from Fox News because they were going to run for president. They both stopped receiving a salary before they announced they were running for president. Sarah Palin is still ka-ching every week with Roger Ailes' money. So what this means is she's not running, but she's still pretending to, and that's why she gave this speech in Manchester, New Hampshire over the weekend on my birthday. Now, I thought if there's a chance that she will announce she's running for president on my birthday, it's like, screw you atheists. You know, I'll believe in God forever if Sarah Palin announced it. And she came out and she trashed the president and talked about her proven record of reform and her proven record of quitting the job because she felt like it and wanted to make more money. And she had more than 1,000 supporters show up to hear her, which I guess is good at this point to have 1,000. And they all came for one reason. They thought she was going to announce it. And it was talked about all last week that she did. Karl Rove himself said he thought that she would announce it on September 3rd. And it didn't happen. There was actually, while she was giving her speech, there were volunteers for Ron Paul and Herman Cain working the crowd, passing out literature to Sarah Palin fans, which is kind of funny. They're trying to poach the Sarah fans. But she said nothing. She said nothing at all in the entire speech, and at the end of it, she just went off stage and had bashed Obama and spoken vaguely and given no policy specifics about how to fix the economy. So that leaves us with Michelle Bachmann.
Oi.
And Michelle Bachmann, well, Ed Rollins quit this weekend. Ed Rollins is her campaign manager. Ed Rollins is famous because he's run a lot of Republican campaigns. He's a regular fixture on TV. You've seen him before. He's a very charismatic guy, beard, bald head. He's a cool guy. He's a very fun speaker. And he defected from the Republicans back in 92 to run Ross Perot's campaign. After that didn't work, he was welcomed back into the fold, and it surprised me to see that he was going to be running the Michelle Bachmann campaign this year. Not anymore. It did not even last long. She bought off the Iowa caucus voters, and the Iowa straw poll voters, rather, and then after Rick Perry sucked the oxygen out of the room, says AP, Michelle Bachmann is hoping to breathe some life back into her campaign. Her veteran campaign manager, Ed Rollins, stepped aside on Monday, as did his deputy, David Polianski. Rollins will remain in an advisory role while Polianski is leaving altogether. I'm worn out, Rollins told Politico. Chris, how do you get worn out of a presidential campaign the year before the presidential campaign starts?
Well, you read the writing on the wall. I think he himself said that she's a number three candidate, so there was no use in sticking around.
Exactly. She's number three, and that makes Mitt Romney a big number two. And so it's going to be more and more fun. I don't think we're going to see too many more GOP folks jumping into the race. Do you?
No. I mean, although there have been some whispers about Christie getting in.
There have been. I don't see it happening. I think Chris Christie is aware of his own poll numbers in Jersey. And,
yeah.
But here's what I love. I love people who say that they can't stand the violent rhetoric of Jimmy Hoffa wanting Chris Christie to get in the race.
exactly.
Yeah, it would be hilarious. So, you know, of course, Fox News is showing all that footage of liberals and unions bringing their guns to rallies. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's to show how it's all so.
And Republicans calling for Second Amendment solutions to Democratic people.
Secretary
Reid.
And that was the Republican candidate.
That's right.
In Nevada, saying Second Amendment solutions. So, you know, it's kind of dopey of us to even have this conversation and talk about how dare they do this. They know what they're doing. They don't care about facts. They don't care about telling the truth. They care about shifting the debate off the things that matter. They care about obstruction. They care about violence. They care about making things as messy as possible and distracting us from the real issue. But you know what? It's fun to point out hypocrisy. And it's good to point out hypocrisy because no one sets out to be a liberal. No one says, hey, you know what? I want to take some points of view that may be unpopular, that may be against their time but are good for America in the long term. I want to be on the right side of history by fighting for things that will take years and years to bring about and have guys with bald eagle fetishes tell me I'm not a real patriot. No one sets out to be that guy.
No.
Once in a while, you wake up and you realize, oh, my God, wait a second. I'm moral. I'm smart. I'd rather my tax dollars help Americans here than blow foreigners up over there. And my taste in music doesn't totally suck. I'm a liberal. And it's horrible. Being a liberal is terrible. You've got to stand up for the unpopular things. When there's a war that the media's got people worked up into a frenzy for, when the liberal media smells a new war and they smell all that ratings money, and everyone wants a war to go bomb the hell out of somebody that the media's told them is evil and a threat to you right now, and you have to stand up for your morality and the Constitution and say it's not right, oh, it sucks. But you know what? You're the reason why America keeps getting better, because the liberals have always been proven right. And we'll talk about it when we come back at 1-800-STEP-12.
Stephanie Miller
is dramatic. She is full of lies. Her whole being, like, she really needs to be on medication. She is sick.
She is indeed. And that's why I'm here, because she's not here on the outpatient basis as she normally is. I'm John Feeblesang, filling in for Stephanie Miller all week from live in New York City, joined, of course, by Chris Lavoie in the Burbank studio.
Yeah.
And we're going to be taking your calls at 1-800-STEP-12. We're going to be talking all about Hoffa and his outrageous comments yesterday that only right-wing AM radio show hosts should be allowed to make. We are going to be talking all about, the presidential race, of course. And we're going to take your calls in just a second, but I want to bring on my first guest of the week. Jim David is one of my favorite New York comedians and writers. He was on his own Comedy Central special, Jim David, Out on the Edge. He's been on Tough Crowd. He did USO tours. He was on the Friars Club roast of Rob Reiner. He's been on Joy Behar, The Tonight Show, Last Comic Standing. And now he joins me here in studio, Jim David.
Hi, John. It's nice to be here with you. We had a fun time doing Laughing Liberally, This Ain't No Tea Party off Broadway.
This is true. Yes, I did. I didn't even get to it. You have so many credits, Jim David.
Yeah.
I didn't get a chance to. But Jim and I were part of an off-Broadway show that ran this spring and summer called Laughing Liberally, This Ain't No Tea Party. And every week and every weekend in Times Square, we came out and did the Lord's work for
It was really fun. It was really fun. And there's an audience that's desperate for comedy.
It really is. Well, and that's one of the reasons why we're doing the Sexy Liberal Tour, because I felt like, you know, so many people out there in America, they love political humor, and they love Bill Maher and Jon Stewart or Colbert, but they don't go to comedy clubs, because comedy clubs aren't a place for political material.
And they're really not, because it's really has to be, if you're going to do liberal material, political material in a comedy club, it has to be the most broad stroke, like George Bush is dumb, Sarah Palin is this, you know, Michelle Bachmann is that. Well, first of all, they don't even know who Michelle Bachmann is.
It's true.
The average comedy club audience has no idea who she is. They barely know who Rick Perry is. They don't know who he is. And they know who Kim Kardashian is. But they know who Bristol Palin is.
Mm-hmm.
They know who Bristol is.
Yeah.
You know, and they know who what's her name Snooki is.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't know who Herman Cain. If I try
and
to
you notice
do a,
they're also happier than all of us political junkies who are already following this.
We're all complete. We wake up every all political junkies wake up every morning with loose stools. Don't you? You just wake up. Just every morning, just a little bit.
Well,
you know, we're so angry all the time.
And it's interesting because I was back in L.A. all last week, and I'm amazed when I go there at all how so many people in Los Angeles are so shallow and superficial and uninformed and unaware and happier than me.
And happier.
And I'm like, don't you care about AIG, bro? I don't listen to hip hop. No. Don't you care what's going on in the economy? And they don't, but they are happier. And I think that that's why I like.
Now, they think that Halliburton is Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton's daughter. That's all they get. And I'm so glad to be able to do that joke where some of the people that are listening absolutely
can actually get it.
Well, they understand what the hell Halliburton is. Because if I told that in a comedy club, they're like, Halla who?
Yeah.
They literally don't know. They think Yves Saint Laurent is the night before Saint Laurent. They don't get it.
But if you told that joke on conservative radio, they probably wouldn't get it either, because Halliburton is not discussed. The fact that people's tax dollars were used for Mercs for Hire, that our troops were guarding KBNR trucks while getting shot at.
Oh, part of the Dick Cheney Antichrist tour. You know, there are certain things we don't mention. We do not talk about it.
Exactly.
It's like the homosexual in the room. We don't talk about it.
Well, not even. Well,
the homosexual elephant.
I don't think that's the case anymore. Now it's actually a better time for LGBT comics than ever, in my opinion.
I've seen your act.
And I've worked with you many times over the years, and you get away with a lot of stuff now that
for a limited amount of time.
Yeah,
for a limited amount of time until you know what I mean. It's like I performed with a comedian in San Antonio, Texas, and he was terrific. He went on before me, but all he talked about was his wife. For 25 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
My wife, my wife, my wife. For 25 minutes. I could not do that. Straight audience. No.
No. You could
no,
not
they
do
would
that.
Not sit there for it.
That's
no.
true.
They're like, okay, we get it.
Even in Texas?
anywhere. I mean, you know, it's like even in New York, they don't want to hear it. You know what I mean? Like they would, after about 3 or 4 minutes of the gay stuff, they're like, okay, we get it. You're gay. Now you can move on.
Right.
You know what I mean? Now we've had enough. And please don't talk about putting things in your mouth.
I understand.
And please don't talk about putting things in orifices.
Yeah. Can you not talk about,
could you
talking
not,
about putting things in orifices?
And they don't. And also, I haven't even brought it up because since I'm in a relationship for 23 years, there is no sex, so you can't, you don't do anything after.
But they love that. That's why I say if you want gay men to stop having sex, let them get married.
Let them get married.
Right?
Let
They'll
them get
be as
married.
Celibate as the breeders.
Ain't that the truth?
Well, it's good to have. Speaking of breeders, Michelle Bachmann, her campaign manager just pulled out faster than Marcus after breeding duty. And I wanted to ask you about Michelle Bachmann because it looks like her campaign is taking a nosedive already. Now, Ed Rollins ran her campaign.
Don't even talk about nosedive and Marcus Bachmann in the same sentence.
Ed Rollins.
That poor man. You know what I mean? That poor man. I mean, all he does is he just had the unfortunate, job of being married to her. Do you know what I mean? And now all of a sudden everybody's trashing him mercilessly.
Why is that an unfortunate job? Because he's married to her. He's been able to get so much social access, and he's been able to, you know, of course, with her.
Well, you know what I mean.
He's gotten tons of federal funds for his reparative therapy.
I know. He doesn't know what hit him. He doesn't know what hit him. You know what I mean? There was this one guy interviewing him at a Fred Karger supporter. You know who Fred Karger is?
Who's Fred Karger for the folks out there?
Fred Karger is a Republican presidential candidate who is openly gay, and nobody knows who he is.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, in fact, he was...
He's the Gary Johnston of LBGT.
He was at the state fair passing out Frisbees, and he went up to Marcus Bachmann and started asking him questions about reparative therapy, and poor Marcus is just trying to hem and haw his way out of that one, and he can't do it. He can't do it.
Well, I find the Bachmanns to be rather disgusting on a spiritual level, because I don't think, well, I know you can't use the Bible to say that same-sex relationships are wrong.
Well, they're trying to walk it all back, you know. They're trying to not talk about it. I mean, Michelle Bachmann, the woman is relentless. You got to give her that. I mean, she's a Stepford wife. It's literally like somebody pulled the thing in her back, you know, mm-hmm. because somebody, what was it, David Gregory on NBC, he said, you know, do you believe that, you know, same-sex relationships are part of Satan? I am running for the presidency of the United States. She stays on message, and she does it relentlessly. I mean, can you imagine being her child? It's like, you know, hey, Mom, have you seen my jeans? Clean up your room. You know, there's no two things about it. You know, she just is so driven. And I admire that in a person, really, because I don't have that kind of drive. I'm like, you know, I get up in the morning and I'm like, I can't be.
No, I know what you're saying. She's like the secret on Nazi meth. I mean, she can get so much done in a day, and it's amazing to see. But, and the Nazis were on meth, by the way. They took them in chocolate form.
Really?
That's a little factoid. Yes, that's how Hitler kept them fighting all night. But, you know, Ed Rollins was her campaign manager. Now, Ed Rollins, we were talking earlier, was the guy who left the GOP to run Ross Perot's campaign in 1992. Comes back into the fold, then he takes on Michelle Bachmann, which surprised a lot of people, until she began doing so great in all the polls and completely buying off the Iowa straw poll and you know, raking in tons and tons of cash, raked in so much more money than Romney during the quarter. And then suddenly Rick Perry gets into the race. It becomes very clear that the Michelle Bachmann novelty campaign is over. And Ed Rollins pulls out this today. He announced he was pulling out because of exhaustion the year before the actual presidential campaign year. He's exhausted of the 2012 presidential
race. He's already tired.
In 2011. Now, of course, he's leaving a sinking ship, and he's going to go try and get a gig somewhere else.
You think so?
Well, of course. He's Ed Rollins. He's not going to sit out 2012. This guy's
he'll be on CNN or have that gig or whatever, right?
He usually is, yeah. But, I mean, what does it say that Michelle Bachmann's whole little campaign is already imploding?
Well, it says that, you know, it is a novelty. I mean, first of all, I don't think that there's any way that Republicans are going to nominate a woman or a black person.
Of course not.
I mean, they're not going to put up a black person, I mean, even in their house.
Okay, let's talk about that.
Herman Cain,
well,
you know.
And Herman Cain's fascinating. Herman Cain is on that stage for one reason. To make the people watching feel better about what they're about to hear about the president for the next 90 minutes. Because you've got Gary Johnson, who's a two-time elected governor of New Mexico, who's mm-hmm. running, who's also a libertarian in favor of decriminalization of drug laws.
Right.
He's running for president. Two-time elected governor, can't get invited to the debates.
What about John Huntsman? I mean, he
he's at the debates.
Oh, he is? But Gary Johnson isn't?
Gary Johnson is not even invited to the debates. Herman Cain, who just sells crappy pizza... He's invited to the debates.
Mm-hmm.
Never been elected, never run for office at all. Herman Cain is there for one reason, folks, to make you feel better about the stuff you're going to hear about the president. When you can't get a two-time elected governor there, the whole thing's a joke, and I know most presidential campaigns are. And in fairness, MSNBC would not have Dennis Kucinich on at their Democratic debate in 2008.
This stuff just pours out of you. Listen
because
to you.
Because I have no life.
Listen to you. It's like you. I don't even know what you're talking. you're just like bubbling over with these useless facts.
It is useless, but here's why. Because it's all a racket. Michelle Bachmann's campaign was never about a legitimate presidential run.
Oh, sure it is for her.
Well, maybe it is for
her. Oh, she's a believer, man.
But what she's really there to do is to be the shiny thing to keep the mouth breeders in the paddock.
Really?
Okay? Yes, Michelle Bachmann's there to keep the charming, less informed Tea Party folk having some bright light to gather around like moths. Now you got Rick Perry, who not only takes away the nutjob vote from Michelle Bachmann, because let's be frank, Rick Perry is a lying, dishonest nutjob. Rick Perry gets those people away, and he's actually electable. So Michelle Bachmann has no value to the party anymore.
That's true, but they're not going to put up a woman in any case. They wouldn't put up Sarah Palin if she joined, I don't think. I don't think they'd put up Bachmann.
I don't know about that.
I don't think they'd put a woman at the top of the ticket.
I certainly think they would. If they thought for a minute Sarah Palin would win, they would put her up. They don't think for a minute Sarah Palin would win. In fact, a Fox News poll suggests that Sarah Palin needs to stay out of the race.
Is that what it said?
Fox News telling their own employee about this, and a Fox News poll revealed that 71% of Republicans do not want Sarah Palin to run for president.
You know, she's a fascinating woman. I watched her speech to the Tea Party yesterday. Did you see that?
What did you think? Because I was waiting for anything specific.
She can make a content-free speech like nobody you've ever seen. She can talk for an hour and not say crap. It's all platitudes, it's all cliches, it's all, we need real reform, no indication of what anything is, you know, she's a very motivational speaker, actually, because, every time she believes in guns, and every time she speaks, I want to get a gun.
No!
You know, a joke, folks.
Yeah, no, it's true.
I would never insult her personally. You know, I mean, she seems like a nice lady, you know, with a narcissistic personality disorder and delusions of grandeur brought on by a lifetime of, you know, being the prettiest girl in town who always got her way. And when the prettiest girl in town does not get her way, she becomes a vengeful, vindictive, rapacious swamp sow who would sell her mother to the Nazis to get what she wants. But other than that, she's lovely.
Swamp sow. Thank you.
That is a direct steal. Can I acknowledge that?
Yes, please.
That is a direct steal from Saturday Night Live when Dan Aykroyd was doing the Jane, you ignorant slut with Jane Curtin. Remember that?
Oh, and I'm getting mocked for going back to 2008 for an MSNBC debate.
But see, no. I acknowledge my, because I'll never forget that. That's my homage to Dan Aykroyd, because he said, you know, he called Jane Curtin a vengeful, vindictive, rapacious swamp sow. And I just said, that is the greatest thing I've ever heard.
Well, it is. And, you know, Sarah Palin, again, she existed for the same reason, to keep people in the paddock, to keep the mouth breathers in the Republican Party. Let's face it, they have them, people who want to vote against their own self-interest, telling Republican voters what they want to
hear. Can I just say something, though, John? I am a mouth breather because I have nasal problems.
You have congestion?
I have to wear breathe right strips at night to not snore.
And look, I don't mean to be condescending to mouth breathers.
Yes, you do.
Well, Sarah Palin is never going to run for president. She is shaking down people for their own money. She's toying with her followers. They're shoveling money into her pack so she and Todd can upgrade the kids' hotel room.
You know what? It's like, what did you and I do wrong? I mean, look at these people that are making so much money. I mean, they are just, Sarah Palin makes Paris Hilton got paid $300,000 to show up at a club. John, what are we doing wrong?
Let me ask you this. Is it worth it to go down in history as a materialistic twit?
Sure.
Really?
I'd be fine with it.
To go down in history as a despised, reviled figure?
Do you know
to
what?
To be Paris Hilton, to be so loved by so many people, and already in 2011 her career is over?
Do you
she
know
can't
what?
Get a show going on
but
Lifetime
do you know what?
Anymore?
I would pick up the pieces of that misery at my place in the Riviera. Can I just say, I want the bucks.
Yeah.
I'm tired of the...
You're willing to be that hated?
I'm tired of the acclaim.
You're willing to be a public joke?
Yeah, sure. Why not? I'm a comedian. I'd be more than willing to be a public
joke. Well, I'm sure we can find...
Because I would take it... I wouldn't take it seriously like these people.
If you're a
closeted, like Snooki doesn't know what to do.
If you're a closeted gay Republican office holder, please call Jim David.
That's
right. I'm John Fugelsang. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. We're taking your calls in the next break at 1-800-STEP-12, and we'll be right back after this.
She's your information slut. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. We are so happy to have you with us. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Stephanie this week from New York City. I'm joined by the hilarious Jim David here in New York. And it's pretty sad about the post office, Jim.
It's every civil institution is in trouble because of all this money we've spent. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like the detritus left by Bush and Cheney never fails to amaze me. The post office? Really?
Yeah, the wars are making
really?
You poor kids. I mean, now, in fairness, the post office is really going out of business, the main reason is that we don't need it as much as we
used. Not as much, no.
And, you know, I thought for a while that this would happen much sooner, but then with Internet, people were buying everything, and the post office was, I think, revitalized for a few years through Amazon.com. And
I still get 80 million pieces of junk mail every day. I mean,
yeah.
I still get as much mail as I ever did before the Internet.
It's still going on, but, of course, it's because of the
Internet.
Except
on my birthday, and then it's all on Facebook. You know? I think I got two birthday cards this year.
I know. I got a card from my mom this year, but I got a lot of my friends on Facebook I've never met said hi to me this weekend.
What does that mean for Hallmark, though? Is Hallmark going out of business because of Facebook?
What does it mean for Shoebox Greetings? What's going to happen? I mean, that's going to be an even tinier little division of Hallmark when they downsource. And downsourcing is my mixed metaphor of the day. That's when you downsize while outsourcing. But the depressing thing is, look, the post office, most of the 80% goes to labor. And the post office takes none of your tax dollars. It's all money from stamp sales. So, you know, they're going to have a Lady Gaga stamp at this point to break even.
That would be fine.
They're going to have Kardashian stamps. They're going to have to go
that would not be fine. No, that I would not. No, we cannot have a Snooki stamp.
It used to be you had to wait 10 years for someone died.
Listen, I just get crazy about Snooki. Can I just tell you how crazy I get?
Please do.
It's like she has a book out. There's a book. There is a physical book that is Snooki. And I if you buy Snooki's book, you have to kill yourself. You know, you have to die. No. I mean, no. I'm serious. Look, can I just stop a minute, Chris and John?
Yes.
Yeah.
If you read anybody who's listening, if you read Snooki's book, you have to kill yourself. Mm-hmm. You have to jump off a building or a bridge or inject yourself with oxygen. You have to die. Your usefulness as a human being has officially expired. If you read the Snooki book. If you pick up the Snooki book.
What did she get? She got like a three book deal, didn't she?
No, listen.
Philip Roth can't get a three book deal.
Listen.
Thomas Pynchon can't get a three book deal.
If you pick up the Snooki book in an airport, you have to slap yourself. You have to beat your face in with a golf shoe. Okay?
I want to go to Joe in Spokane talking about Vermont and the damage in Vermont because we're also talking about the war budget. Hey, Joe.
Good morning, gentlemen. Yeah, I see Vermont, they say it's going to take approximately $2 billion to rebuild that state alone, not counting New Jersey and et cetera. I was thinking the people in Vermont, if they want to drive on new roads and bridges, hop a flight to Afghanistan, because that's exactly how much we spend per week, $2
billion. $2 billion?
Are you sure about that figure? It was $1 billion. At its peak, Iraq was $1 billion.
No, actually, Iraq was $10 billion a month during the main part of the war. It's drawn down to $1 billion a month now. Afghanistan, remember we put that little surge in there?
Uh-huh.
Remember those guys? And then
yeah.
You know how many private contractors are there? Who's
how
paying
many?
For all that? That's all our tax money. It's $2 billion a week. Look it up.
And your tax dollars are going to pay a private contractor six times what your servicemen are being paid.
Exactly.
Hey, you know what? Can I just ask him, since he called, John, since you called in, why do you think that where do you live in Spokane?
Yeah, Spokane.
Why do people, like you live out in the world, I mean, John and I live here in New York, which is a bubble, and we only hang around with like-minded people because we hate everyone. You know, why do you think that the American people are not just flipping out over this? You know?
I think it's because I'm 60 years old, and I look at the people I work with who are in their 20s and 30s. Every minute they're not working, they have a device in their hand and they're doing something.
Yeah, but why are they not learning things with this device? You know,
well,
it's like, well,
why
if I had this device, huh?
Why is our children not learning, like George Bush said?
Yeah.
It's because they're dumbed down. The people I work with, they know who Kim Kardashian is. They don't know much about anything else.
Yeah, but you know what? Is that even that new? I mean, really, when you think about it, why was Vietnam allowed to go on for so many years? People are distracted. People don't want to know the truth. People don't want to pay attention
to
this.
It's not. You know what? It's like my mother, John. It's like my mother. It's like, could we not talk about that?
Hey,
you know, at the dinner table.
I showed you Vietnam, and it did bring it to an end. I marched with 400,000 people in Seattle, Washington, way back when, and it did stop the war. But now the war is not televised, and people on their smartphone, I don't know what they're doing, text messaging someone.
No,
they're not looking at facts.
You're very right, Joe, and I thank you for the call.
Guys.
Thank you. And, you know, it's true. Back in Vietnam, you would see the horrors of war on your TV every night.
Every night.
The first Gulf War, President Bush made sure that never happened again.
I don't think that we have seen any
footage of Afghanistan, really, have we?
Of combat footage?
Yeah.
Not really.
Have
no.
we seen anything?
If you watch documentaries, you can see some, but generally, no. I'll tell you the one smart thing President Obama did. He had his surge, he sent the extra troops over there, and then he's going to bring them back just in time for the Democratic Convention next year. You'll see the troops coming home in time to vote for Obama.
Really?
Pretty sneaky, sis. I'm John Fugelsang. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. We'll be right back, taking your calls at 1-800-STEP-12.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Hoo-ah! Don't it feel good?
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph all week while she is in France, where all liberals come from and go back to. And we are taking your calls at 1-800-STEP-12. I want to thank Mr. Jim David for joining us. You can follow his hilarious commentary at jimdavid.com or on the Twitter at comicjimdavid, C-U-M-I-C, at comicjimdavid on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at John Fugelsang, but it involves knowing how to spell Fugelsang. Chris Lavoie with us, as always, in the Burbank Bureau. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Very, very good. It's going to be an exciting hour. I've got some terrific guests this week. Some of my favorite people in all of America are going to be on this show in the next hour. With me in studio right now is a comedian that if you don't know by now, you will never, never know him at all. Actually, that's not true. You're going to know this guy. This guy's one of my favorite comics. You may have seen him doing a rant on Afghanistan and Iraq on Conan's show, of all places. He's done stuff on Showtime. He's been on Paul Provenza's show, The Green Room, on Showtime. He hosts Citizen Radio with Allison Kilkenny, one of my favorite bloggers. And this guy's been praised by everybody from Chomsky to Robin Williams and me. He's Jamie Kilstein. Hey, Jamie.
Hello. And thanks for the
Did I build you up enough?
I don't know what to do.
Well, you joined me last year on the show when I was hosting Labor Day week, and I thought it'd be great to have you back because you're one of the fiercest political comics that I know.
Oh, thanks, man.
And I also wanted to have you here because I can't handle this other guest on my own. I've got you for the next half hour or so, but Rude Pundit, you know, this guy's like, if you can catch Rude Pundit and get that lightning in a bottle, you'll probably electrocute yourself. And I wanted to have the Rude Pundit on, first off, because having Rude and Jamie on at the same time is a dream come true, but also, Rude, we got to talk about Jimmy Hoffa. Are you there?
Yeah. Hey. Hello, everybody. John, Jamie, and Jim. It's J-Day. Okay.
We have no Jim, but we do have Chris.
Chris
is there.
I know. People confuse us all the time.
Yeah. Jim's off playing harmonica at a Stone show. But listen, I want to talk to you about this Hoffa thing because it's fascinating, and I have a TV on, and I'm watching CNN air the speech over and over and over again. If you're on Twitter and you search Hoffa, you'll see the right wing talking about how the left is every bit as violent as them, and they're furious that Jimmy Hoffa Jr. would dare use language reserved only for AM right-wing radio hosts. Rude, let's just, for the sake of the folks who haven't heard it before, Chris, can we play the Fox News clip?
Yeah. Which one? Ed Henry?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Election. I should note as well that some of the union officials, the labor crowd, the president also trying to rev up his political operation heading into 2012. The Teamster president, Jimmy Hoffa Jr., was speaking a couple moments ago and saying, we'll remember in November who's with the working people. He was chiding Republicans, specifically named the Tea Party, and then his language got a lot stronger. And pardon my language as I repeat
it.
But he said of the Tea Party and Republicans, quote, let's take these sons of bitches out. It got some cheers from this crowd here in Detroit.
Oh my.
I'm assuming the president's rhetoric will not be quite as harsh.
I just want to make sure we understand. Who exactly said that, and it was basically in connection with opening remarks to the president?
Get in there, Gretchen.
This is Jimmy Hoffa Jr., the Teamsters president. He spoke maybe 5 or 10 minutes ago, warming up before
Gretchen
the president.
Gretchen doesn't like that kind of talk.
Arrived in Detroit already, but was not here on site when Jimmy Hoffa Jr. made those comments. We should be very clear about that. But nonetheless, he's part of the official program here, leading into the president, trying to fire up the crowd. Pretty tough rhetoric, obviously.
Speaking about the Tea Party, the quote was.
Well, the sentence before that was he was talking about Republicans and the Tea Party and saying that he said something like, we'll remember in November who's with working people, but then specifically said, quote, let's take these sons of bitches out.
Well, that's pretty violent talk, isn't it, Rude?
I love how much they're getting off on saying sons of bitches.
Yeah.
Gretchen Carlson this morning on Fox and Friends just kept saying it over and over, and I thought, should this be turning me on?
First of all, did the Fox host just quote V for Vendetta? I think they're trying to make us. So that was the first thing that caught me. Also, I had a sneaking suspicion that when Labor gave us the weekend, it was just so they knew that we'd all be at home when they could eventually take us out with their union socialist suicide bombings, correct?
Exactly. I think people were really upset that the mic went out when Aretha Franklin was singing shortly after that. I mean, mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure that's what most people there probably remembered. Hearing Jimmy Hoffa say "son of a bitch" has got to be like, you know, every 5 minute occurrence.
Well, and again, the Fox News was not, and our friends at Big Government and the Andrew Breitbart Raptors were not exactly going off on the sons of bitches line. They were going off on, he said, take them out, take them out. And we know that no one hates violent rhetoric more than Republicans, right? I mean, Republicans would never say things like Second Amendment solutions or bring guns to town hall meetings. We all know this, right? We're civilized. Are we not, men?
Right.
Here,
they don't reload. None of them would ever say reload.
Now, it may shock you to learn that this was actually not what Mr. Hoffa said, and that little bit they played was a little bit taken out of context.
Sorry, was that Uzi photoshopped in that saw?
Yes, the Uzi. Yes, that was photoshopped in, okay. like the Oswald picture. Can we get Chris the actual clip of what Mr. Hoffa was really talking about?
Yeah, the unedited one is.
It's
right.
Something a bit more dangerous than a gun. It's
Everybody
about voting.
Got to vote. If we go back and we keep the eye on the prize, let's take these son of a bitches out and give America back to America where we belong. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
In other words, when he said, let's take these SOBs out, he was doing it in the context of using the vote, using the democratic process. Rude. How could Fox News get this so wrong?
Well, I think that what he's doing is he's encouraging them to do something that the Republican Party is working really hard to stop right now, and that's working class people voting. So that's the biggest threat right there.
Exactly. We were talking earlier in the show about how this is, you know, nothing new from the Republicans giving in 92 black churches walk-around money to encourage people not to vote on Election Day, to Bush Sr. vetoing motor voter, which would have automatically registered you the second you got your driver's license. The GOP does whatever they can to keep people from voting, because it's not about liberal and conservative, it's about aristocracy versus democracy, and they hate democracy. Rick Perry, the hero of the Tea Party, actually wants to repeal the amendment that allows people to pick their own senators.
Why not?
Why not?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's that way we get more and more like a British system, I think. And that maybe that's really what he wants to return to.
I think the biggest thing that's not being talked about here is it's about manufacturing fake outrage, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you look at this, and first of all, we're grown-ups, right? Even, you know what I mean? Like, someone's allowed to say a naughty word. I think that with the way the economy is, with the now three wars going on, it's like there are more important things to talk about. It's like, you know what offends me? Son of a bitch doesn't offend me. What offends me are the countless Iraqi and Afghani civilians that are dying every day, the U.S. troops that are dying.
U.S. troops are dying every
day.
Well,
what offends me is that we're the richest country without health care.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all of these things offend me more than a bad word. It's like, are we 5 years old?
Exactly. Rude?
I had totally forgotten that troops were dying overseas. I never hear about that, so I'm just not sure that that's really happening.
I know. I think one time I saw a picture of a casket, but someone was immediately fired for that, and I forgot what I saw.
Exactly right. This is manufactured outrage. And again, they're hyping up the SOB line because they know they don't get a lot of traction out of the Take Me Out line, because they know as soon as the Take Them Out line is there, they're just trying to use profanity to smear the left in any way. Now, what he should have done, Hoffa should have called them Kenyans just to confuse the Fox News viewers. We're going to take these Kenyans out and demand they show their birth certificates. That would have spoken to their language.
Can I say, I think the reason they're harping on the SOB language is because if they harped on Take Them Out, the Tea Party would be like, now that's a relatable fella. And I think they'd finally be like, I'm all about killing people. All right.
Oh, you know, the other thing, Hoffa had also said that we're facing a war on workers. You know, he placed it in a larger context here, that it was a response to a war that had been started against workers, and so he was just saying that it's time for them to go on offense with their votes, not with their Second Amendment solutions, as you said earlier, John.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with the Second Amendment solutions is it's like that can't be taken out of context. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like the thing is, this is clearly, again, taken completely out of context, just like the Acorn incident was. And you know, the Democrats have to stick up for what's right. I mean, this would be an amazing opportunity to not only get the back of Hoffa and get the back of labor and talk about how important voting rights for all citizens are, since we are a democracy, air quote, as opposed to just throwing the guy under the bus like they did with Acorn.
Yeah, and Rude, I'm sure you've heard Trumka and the Teamsters talk and the unions talking about the possibility of not supporting Democrats automatically in this coming election.
Right. But isn't that a way to put them on notice, to say that the battle is for the workers? It's not the
exactly.
battle for Democrats.
And is that not what the Tea Party did for the right?
Yeah, I think so. Although, again, I would probably argue that this is something that's coming from a union, even though people try to make a union the equivalent of the Koch brothers funding something, that there's something a little more grassroots about something coming from a union versus the Koch brothers and others funded tea parties.
Exactly.
And what I thought was interesting was that Obama, to get to what Jamie was saying, what Obama said in his speech after later was, "We've had enough of fake controversies or of false kinds of false stories being put out there. Enough wasting time on
who's we? Who's we that's had enough of that?
I hope it's America."
I would say maybe half of us have had enough of that. The other half are feeding on that.
Yeah, the other half are making their living.
Well, and that's why I want to ask you about this. It was interesting to hear Dick Cheney come on TV this week and tell the truth about Sarah Palin when he said that he has a lot of problems with the fact that she's never explained why she left the governor's office. Now, I want to shift to Cheney because, you know, Cheney, I mean, Cheney's so evil he doesn't melt in Mordor. We were doing Cheney's evil jokes all last week, and I pointed out that his book has everything in it except the time he went to Sweden and beat Max von Sydow playing chess.
If Cheney needs answers from Sarah, I know how he could try to get them.
How?
He would torture her.
I was
trying to make a coy torture joke.
Well, in fairness, Cheney would have someone else do it and call it enhanced interrogation.
That is true.
But, Rude, I was curious.
I feel like there's a poem there called Waterboarding Sarah or something, a short movie.
Yeah, well, Cheney's going to be karma boarded. But I was curious, Rude, after your book, which is a terrific book, The Rude Pundit Almanac, how you felt about seeing Dick Cheney's No Apology Tour all last week.
I felt like I was having some kind of flashback, that I was going to curl up in a corner and start convulsing. Whenever I saw him appear, first of all, skinny Dick Cheney is just a frightening, frightening figure. And I just can't stand the idea that he has no heartbeat. His heart just sounds like a whirr. It's just, that's what you hear when you stand next to Dick Cheney. He's definitely not human anymore.
In between whirs, and I do have this, one of my sources did say, if you listen really carefully, you can hear the cries of dead children. That could be a rumor. I don't know.
That's what he used to fuel them. He fuels his heart with the souls of dead children.
That's
exactly right.
That sounds right.
Dick Cheney's so evil, his horcruxes destroyed themselves. But, you know, I want to say two things about Cheney that stuck in my mind. Number one, you know, I'm sick of him being compared to Darth Vader. I think it's offensive. Darth Vader actually saw combat.
Sure.
Number two, speaking to his weight loss, Rude, I do think that what we're seeing here is Cheney in the throes of a really bad bout of heart disease. This is what took my dad's life. My dad lost all that weight. And I do think that Cheney is a very unhealthy man right now. It seems to me that this whole book is his last stab at being taken seriously as a statesman.
And let us also remember that Darth Vader at the end redeemed himself by tossing the Emperor.
Of course, let's also forget Darth Vader's daughter didn't, you know, force the Empire's agenda down the Rebels' throat either.
Yeah, and then
Darth Vader's daughter didn't defend the invasion of Alderaan.
You know what I think the scariest thing about the Cheney tour is? is that, you know, when you read, like, when you read a good book, like when you read a Howard Zinn book and suddenly you're like, oh, my God, all the answers are there. Like, everything's going to be fixed. And then you wake up and you realize, like, oh, no, I just read that. I feel like with Cheney, it was one of those moments where I wasn't watching in fetal fear as much as I was watching. And when he was admitting to these war crimes, I was almost waiting for, like, Chris Hansen to, like, bust down the door and be like, oh, you just admitted it. Like, you're going to jail. Like, bring in the team. And that's what's so scary is that, you know, we always hear this talk about looking, you know, looking forward and not looking back. But when you look back and people are committing war crimes, you have to do something about that or else, you know, it's not always going to be Barack Obama in office. So Barack Obama may know that he's not going to waterboard anybody. Or he says that he's not going to commit war crimes, but we don't know if we're going to have, you know, a President Perry or President Bachman down the line. And if somebody can get away with profiting, with going on a book tour where you are making money, you are going on these major news shows, borderline bragging about committing war crimes, where does that set us up for the future?
And that's it sets us up for Dick Cheney will not be doing a book tour in any part of Europe.
Yes,
what do you think Cheney's legacy will be? You don't think he's ever going to be prosecuted, right?
No, and in fact, I've said before that I think one of the great failures of the Obama administration was coming in and not starting prosecutions or at least investigations, and just saying let's just forget about that, or hey, let me see which of these things I want to use for myself. That was a failure. That I think that part of the election of 2008 was that we wanted to see some people punished.
I agree with you. I think it would have been great for the moral reason and also to put these guys on defense, which I'd like to see Democrats doing more. Yeah. Rude, we're out of time, Rude Pundit, but I love your blog. I follow you on Twitter. I follow you on Facebook. You are the rudest pundit out there.
RudePundit.blogspot.com.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you. We'll be right back with taking your calls at 1-800-STEPH-12.
This is a disgusting display.
Boy, you can say that again.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller. Can't you see I'm burning alive? Can't you see my lady? Got another lover. I don't know how I'm gonna survive.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show coming to you from New York City. I'm John Fugelsang filling in for Steph with Chris LaVoy in the LA studio. Good morning, Chris.
Hiya.
I'm joined by one of my favorite comedians in all of America, Jamie Kilstein, who you might have seen on Showtime's The Green Room with Paul Provenza or on The Conan Show. And this is a guy who got Noam Chomsky to come do his radio show, Citizen Radio. I'm a big fan of your radio show.
Oh, thanks, man. I just thought about what we were talking about before with the Cheney thing, where I'm like, do you think if he said, son of a bitch, that maybe then we could have, like, people would be up in arms. Like, he was like, yeah, I may have tortured and led us into some illegal wars and shot a dude in the face. And people are like, and then if he just somehow dropped son of a bitch and they were like, this is America, sir.
I don't see it happening. He told Patrick Leahy FU on the Senate floor.
Oh, that's right.
He was too upset about it. Yeah.
He sure did.
Plus, I don't think that it's going to give the Republicans the bump they're hoping for. I think that the Breitbart trolls are all really thinking people will be outraged over what Hoffa said, but I think if people listen to the whole speech, the more CNN plays the entire speech, the more people are going to agree with it.
Seriously. It's hard not to. I mean,
and
that's the whole thing. Like, I always try to put myself in, like, in Republican shoes, sort of, where, you know,
that's easy for me. I come from a big conservative Southern family and a big conservative Brooklyn family.
Yeah. And I try to, because I'm like, all right, the people I know, the people I meet, they're not bad. So how do you put yourself in Republican shoes? You steal poor people's shoes. No, you.
But that's not the average Republican. Those are the ones that dupe the average Republican into voting for them.
I think the big thing is Democrats need to just be louder, because we have facts on our side, we have empathy on our side, but the Republicans are just more organized. What they lack in facts and stuff, they make up for in pamphlet-making skills
exactly.
That are out there.
Well, we're going to talk about that coming up after the break and taking your phone calls as well about the GOP at 1-800-STEPH-12.
Stephanie Miller.
Oh, see? That's what happens when you drink all day and skip lunch.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph, who's off in France. being sexy and doing the things she does.
Being French and gay.
To talk about. Being French and a hot lesbian in France. It's just so much dirtier with the imagery of armpit hair. if you know there's a possibility it's hotter.
Such a cliche liberal thing. I can't believe she's actually in France. Oh, she's in Cuba.
Yeah. She's in France, and she's giving away health care. Horrible liberal. I'm here with Jamie Kilstein, one of my favorite comics in the world, and we are now joined on the phone by, well, hey, man, if you care about quality journalism, if you care about men who know what time it is, you care about the Boston Globe's Charlie Pierce. Good morning, sir.
Hi, it's 10:34. Do you know where your host is? Yeah. She's in France, eating cheese and other things.
She's in France letting the Nazis come in. That's exactly what she's doing.
What do you mean eating cheese, Charlie? She's drinking wine.
She's drinking wine and eating cheese and other things.
She gets a little wine boxes.
She's going to go to France. If she went to Cuba, they'd make her work.
That's true.
Sugar cane and stuff.
That's true. Yeah, no, over in France, all she has to do is just help appease.
She should go on the Mitt Romney Mormon mission tour.
Why?
That's where Mitt Romney went on his Mormon mission.
Oh, to France.
Not just to France, but to Provence.
That worked, right? They're all Mormon now.
They're absolutely. It's a hotbed of magic under
That's why Mitt's tearing it up in the polls. Charlie,
That's right. Provence has the most boring underwear shops in France.
Well, now you know that, listener. Aren't you glad Steph's not here? Charlie, there's so much to talk about. First off, any thoughts on this Hoffa speech over the weekend and his outrageous... Do you love that people who defend Rush Limbaugh are demanding that Barack Obama criticize Hoffa for uncivil speech?
That's a story I came to late. In fact, I knew nothing about it until I was listening to the show this morning. Because yesterday, what I did was, on Labor Day, I watched Jim Dementopalooza from South Carolina.
Oh my God!
Wasn't it great? The debate that wasn't a debate.
It was a let's pay homage and kiss the puckered butt of Jim DeMent and Steve King, two guys who are unarguably extremists.
Mm-hmm, the King and the Kingmaker.
And I had to sit there and watch Mitt Romney talk about job creation, which is like listening to Charlie Manson talk about thoracic surgery.
But he's a businessman, and he's not a career politician. Hearing Mitt Romney talk about a guy whose father ran for president, who ran for attorney general, rather, whose mother ran for office, whose brother ran for office. He's been a governor and run for president and came in second, and he's talking about career politicians?
He's run for Senate, then been a governor, then run for president, remember?
I forgot about Senate. That's when he was pro-choice, right?
That's when he was gayer than Ted Kennedy.
And now he's pro-lifeier than Mitt Romney, than Rick Perry.
But any country that allows a party to exist as a political entity in which you have to go to South Carolina and pay homage to an extremist like Jim DeMent, any country that allows that thing to continue to be a viable political entity deserves what it gets. I mean, that was the story of the weekend. It absolutely screamed for coverage and nobody went there.
Well, in fairness,
Steve King is a silo full of xenophobic craziness, and Jim DeMint's no better.
Right. Well, but in fairness, Jim DeMint's a real rock star after beating Alvin Green in that hotly contested Senate race last year.
And to get nominated as the presidential candidate for the Republican Party, these are the people you have to respect.
You have to grovel towards, and you have to pretend to respect them. And that's why it's interesting seeing this campaign, because really, there's two people running for president and about eight running for higher public speaking fees. All right, that's what's going on. It's a two-horse race, and Newt Gingrich is trying to get people to still pay for him to go talk at colleges. That's all it's about.
By the way, he has gotten large.
Newt?
I mean, he is Leon getting
larger. He's a weeble American now. He actually can't fall down. He's so large. He can only wobble.
A weeble American.
Yeah, you think his tab at Tiffany's is cute.
Anyway,
you see his tab at Carl's Jr.
I mean, am I surprised that, James Riddle Hoffa Jr. used the word sons of bitches in public? No!
But that's not what it's about. They're claiming outrage because he said we have to take the sons of bitches out, and they're saying it was a call to violence. When you hear the entire sentence, which Fox didn't air, he said, you have to vote, we have to take these sons of bitches out.
Right.
I mean, what we're seeing is Fox is actually taking cues from Breitbart now on how to present the news.
Right. I think Breitbart took his cues originally from Fox. I mean, Fox has been doing this for years.
Yeah, and, at least Breitbart's now branched out with Anthony.
By the way, I'd like to speak on behalf of the rest of the human race and say that Ed Henry is the world's dumbest human.
Yeah.
Why? Why?
Because he's either absolutely corrupt or he's the stupid or he's the dumbest human since we walked out of Olduvai Gorge. There's absolutely no way he didn't know what was going on yesterday.
If your job is to please Roger Ailes, he's very smart.
Well, there's no accountability. That's why these guys can get away with it. They can get away with doctored videos. They can get away with just blatantly lying. I mean, if Fox News were an honest news organization, then every Monday they'd give the news, and every Tuesday would be 24 hours of corrections. Mm-hmm. But they're not, because nobody holds them accountable. I feel like the media is not accountable to facts anymore.
And what's sad now is that Fox News has gotten so big that that people like CNN take their cues off of Fox News and is running this edited clip of Jimmy Hoffa.
Right, just because they have to compete for money.
Exactly.
And inevitably, sometime in the next 3 days, you're going to see the White House walk back on this, too.
Why?
No doubt in my mind.
You
will never see Barack Obama and James Hoffa Jr. on the same stage ever again. I guarantee.
Well, we didn't see them together yesterday, and they're trying to tie.
He will find himself outside the camp. I guarantee it. Because they won't call this out. The president is still talking, and Steph gets mad at me when I say this, but he's still talking.
Steph's
about
not
this.
Here.
I mean, my lord. I mean, this is a guy who said that the other day said that something not getting passed wasn't a Democratic or Republican problem. Of course, it's a Republican problem.
Yeah.
Defend yourself.
Well, and that's the thing. We were talking about this earlier on the show. The good thing about the Tea Party, no one's ever said that sentence before on this show, but the good thing about the Tea Party is it proves if the people lead, the leaders will follow.
Right.
And it proves that if we on the left would hold our elected officials' feet to the fire more, they would represent our interests and the things they ran on. I don't think it's counterproductive to disparage Obama or to criticize Obama. Some of us are criticizing the guy because we want him to get reelected. If your brother's a junkie, you don't write him off. You don't pick a new brother. You try to help your brother get back to the guy he's supposed to be.
No, you look forward and not backwards.
I agree with everything you just said, John. I want him to defend himself. I want him to explain to people that it isn't Washington that's clogged, and it isn't Congress that's clogged. It's the fact that one of our two major political parties is out of its freaking mind.
It has been
for 5 years.
If he walks back from this, he's not walking back from language. He's not walking back from rhetoric. If he walks back from this, then he is walking back from someone saying, hey, we should vote. And that's really scary. Do you know what I mean?
And I think the rude one touched upon this earlier. There is a national campaign going on right now to restrict voting rights.
Yes.
It's not a state-by-state thing. It's not a state issue. It's a national issue. It deserves a national response. We're not getting it.
Well, but it's always been going on, Charlie. It's nothing new. Trying to keep minorities from voting has been a pastime of our Republican friends for many decades.
Yeah, but I've never seen a systematic effort like this, not since the end of Jim Crow. This is remarkably well-financed, remarkably well-organized, and remarkably vast on a national scale.
What's going to happen next year? Are we going to see a lot of black folks showing up, a lot of naturalized immigrants showing up at polling places and being told they can't vote for this reason or that reason?
I don't encourage this, and I hope it doesn't happen. You're going to see people punching each other at polling places. I mean, people are going to show up not knowing these new laws or believing they have the right ID and being told they have the wrong ID. My favorite one is in Texas, where you can use a firearms ID but not a college ID to vote, which I think is a very tightly drawn law.
I think what they do in Texas is they just set up bullseyes of the candidates, and you have to shoot the one you don't vote for.
Oh, now see now, Jamie, you're going to be on Fox at noon. Gretchen Carlson is at home right now on the fading couch like Aunt Pity Pat Hamilton with a fan going, oh.
Every other word is edited. I shoot candidate.
I do agree with you guys. You were talking earlier about how much they love to say sons of bitches.
Well, yeah, and I mean, but I think that that's fun for them. But what they're really doing is criticizing the guy because he was telling people to go vote. That was the real sin of him. I want to ask you, Charlie, did you have a good Labor Day?
I had a terrific Labor Day, and I'd like to thank, you know, generations of socialists who made it possible.
Exactly. Everybody out there who hates organized labor better damn well have shown up to work yesterday.
I had a friend of mine who said you're either with organized labor or you should just call it National Cookout Day.
Well, it's very true, and it's incredible when you look at our history and the history of Republicans who've been so labor the entire time. It was Lincoln who said, if any man tells you Teddy Roosevelt said, it is essential there should be organization of labor. Capital organizes, and therefore labor must organize. Lincoln said labor is the superior of capital and deserves much the higher consideration. If any man tells you he loves America yet hates labor, he is a liar. If he tells you he trusts America yet fears labor, he is a fool. Lincoln. Ronald Reagan in 1980 said, where free unions and collective bargaining are forbidden, freedom is lost. The Republican Party used to stand for working people, didn't they?
Well, I mean, the Republican Party used to stand for a lot of things it doesn't stand for anymore. It doesn't seem to stand for anything now except organized money and white skin.
I mean, Nixon's environmental record is the way this is going is going to be better than the Obama administration's.
Exactly. It was Nixon's
healthcare plan, too.
It was Nixon who signed the order creating OSHA.
Nixon and Goldwater would never be welcome in the party. And in fairness, Reagan in 1980
was. Teddy Roosevelt.
Remember, not at all.
These were smart guys. Teddy Roosevelt wasn't sticking up for organized labor because he was particularly sympathetic to the working man. He was sticking up for organized labor so there wouldn't be a revolution.
Exactly, right. And that's why Teddy Roosevelt was a real conservative. And today he'd be fine with the imperial stuff. He'd be fine with Iraq. He'd be fine with having our troops all over the world. He'd love it. But on the environmental label, he'd be disgusted with his party. And when it comes to the rich controlling the entire economy and the working people being screwed, Teddy Roosevelt would be disgusted.
Well,
with his party.
And then you look at who would be mad about the foreign policy. Dwight Eisenhower would be mad at that. You know, like, I don't understand why we can't just use. I mean, Jesus, I feel like any time you watch a Republican debate. It's just, there are so many words that I can't use. Yeah. They get very excited about Ronald Reagan. Why can't we just throw Reagan's words back at him?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, in theory, the window into the Republicans and their use of Ronald Reagan now that he's, you know, dead and can't speak for himself,
right.
For me was always the stem cell Alzheimer's debate. When we had Sam Brown back saying that Nancy Reagan wasn't speaking for Ronald Reagan, and Mike Deaver, God bless him, came out on CNN and said, you know what, Ronald Reagan didn't have to take care of Ronald Reagan for 5 years.
Wow.
You know, and I thought to myself, you know, because my dad died of Alzheimer's and so did all four of his siblings, I said, that is exactly the way to answer these people.
Mm.
I mean, Sam Brownback or some dunce. I mean, most of these people are an embarrassment to advanced democracy. I mean, this thing I watched yesterday was unbelievable. There is absolutely no way a mature, advanced democracy in the 21st century should have one party that's completely relied on the good graces of people like Jim DeMint.
Yeah, Charlie,
and
we got to go.
That should be a political issue.
You're exact. We got to go before we go to break. Really quick, is it Rick Perry's to blow?
I think right now it is. Yeah, I mean, I mean, I don't know what exactly happened with Ed Rollins and the Bachman campaign, but that campaign is headless now. In which case, in which explanation I include the candidate, and people just don't like Mitt.
Yeah, they don't like him.
I mean, there's a visceral dislike for him.
My Republican family can't stand him.
I mean, I've never seen a candidate in my lifetime that other candidates so obviously despise.
John McCain, there you go. It's great having you, Charlie. I'm sorry, we got to go to break. We'll be reading your column at the Boston Globe. Thank you, Charlie Pierce.
Well,
we'll be right
back. Bye-bye.
Thank you. 1-800-STEP-12, taking your calls after the break.
This is a disgusting display.
Boy, you can say that again.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Heart, y'all. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph while she frolics in France, as all the foxy liberal lesbians do.
Yep.
That's where they're spawned. And we're taking your calls at 1-800-STEP-12. I'm joined by comedian extraordinaire, one of the most brilliant guys I know, from Showtime's The Green Room, from The Conan Show, and announcements we can't make yet, right?
Yes.
Big news coming in your career, though.
There will be angry, political, unapologetic, liberal yelling on a station soon for a long amount of time.
I love working with Jamie Kilstein because he raises my game so much. The guy is so smart. He's so ferocious. He's so political and a heavily tattooed vegan, which will just confound the right winger in your life. You want to take some calls?
Yeah.
Michael in Denver has been on the phone for a long time. Michael, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hey, John, Chris, how you guys doing?
Good morning.
Special guest star, you've been keeping me off the air. Thanks a lot.
It's only because he's so good, man.
But anyway, hey, I don't usually get to listen live, but I'm watching on the YouTube machine there, and I see Chris there pushing buttons, doing his thing. Hey, Chris, and next to him there's just a picture of Charlie Sheen.
Oh, man, stop it now.
Did I wait a while to get to that joke or what?
Yeah, you waited. Hey. I hope it was worth it for you.
I got a quick Cheney joke.
Please.
Guy goes to a newsstand every day, puts 50 cents down on the newsstand, picks up the paper, reads the Headline, puts the paper down, walks in the office building, comes back next day, does the same thing, goes on and on. He puts 50 cents down, he reads the headline, walks out. Finally, the guy can't stand. He says, what are you doing? You put 50 cents down here, you're reading the headline. What are you looking for? He goes, I'm looking for obituary. He goes, obituaries are in the back. He goes, no, the guy I'm looking for is going to be on the front page.
All right, that joke is 70 years old. Franklin Roosevelt told that exact joke about himself.
Did I get yelled at for bumping a joke book joke and a Charlie Sheen joke? I've been waiting for an hour and a half to get this Charlie Sheen joke out. And this comedian with his political points and his messages.
Michael. I gave over $200 to go to see the Sexy Liberal show in Denver.
Oh, you did? Yeah. Oh, right on, man. Yeah. Well, I'm going to open with that joke, so thank you. I'm stealing it from you. Because you stole it from Franklin. Robert Vaughn in his one-man show about Franklin Roosevelt in the 80s told that joke on stage as part of it.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, Michael, I know you had a point originally, though, before you...
I had a point originally. I was just a point of how hopeless our country's in. My wife and I are ballroom dancers. I'm out ballroom dancing this weekend, and one of my acquaintances there is a electrical engineer, a scientist at the Solar Energy Research Institute. Golden, the thing Jimmy Carter started, and it's been in various states of funding ever since, been kind of, you know, struggled to stay open sometimes. I'm talking to him about solar energy and stuff, and he goes, oh, have you been out to our campus lately? I said, no. He goes, you should see the money they're spending. I mean, we got money we haven't even counted. He goes, it's criminal, the money they're spending. I'm going, dude, this is where we're at.
What do you mean?
Well, he's a solar research scientist. He can't believe we're spending money on solar research now. He wants to cut off funding now. I said, how about we start with your job? He goes, well, no, everybody else's job. The guys came before me. It's like our whole psyche. This is an engineer. I mean, he's been working at this energy lab for a decade.
And he's complaining? It sounds like he's a solar engineer who can't believe a progressive administration is funding him.
It's like Obama derangement syndrome. It's like, what was starting wars? What was Medicare Part D? This is criminal. What were those? I mean, it's just the language, and it just, it just hit me like a ton of bricks.
Michael, I think the thing that's so scary right now is people, you know, you watch the news, and it's this very, you know, almost like borderline violent rhetoric where, you know, it's the gays, or it's the socialist president, or it's the Muslims, and everybody is just in this, like, constant state of fear where they're like, everyone's against me, I just need to support myself, and that's all I care about.
We got no hope. The crash has got to come, and it's got to fall down. We're going to have to pick it up. We can't rebuild it.
All right, I thank you for the call, Michael, but I got to tell you, I got more hope than ever. I mean, I'm sorry, but every time you want to point at something bad, I can point you at five things that are good. You know, people are more engaged than ever. You're talking about solar being funded. I mean, that to me is a good thing. You want to talk about the fact that, you know, the people who are leading the fight against global warming now, in my opinion, are school students who are writing term papers on it and coming home and convincing their parents the science is real. I mean, there's so many. Look at the fact that gay people, when I first moved to New York City as a teenager, were still an oppressed minority that was full of shame and being plagued by AIDS, and today they're allowed to get married in my state.
Oh my God, dude.
Anywhere you want to look for negatives, I can show you positives right back.
You want to talk about that? Trying to get like the sort of like name guests, Allison and I for Citizen Radio occasionally will take these sort of field trips and try to talk to people who you would never hear on the news, because you watch the mainstream news and it's rich white dudes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you have like David Brooks being like, well, I can sympathize with the Latina housewife. It's like, really? You can? You're a millionaire. And so we went to Stonewall.
Yeah.
Where the uprising happened.
Actually, it wasn't, but it was. I mean, it was
right.
A different bar, but yeah.
Yeah. So we went to Stonewall down in the West Village in New York City, and we talked to a bartender who was there during the uprising, and this guy was the most positive, happy. He was like this 70-year-old bartender. He looked like he was 50. He was hilarious. Mm-hmm. Smacked me on the ass to say goodbye. I mean, the guy was just, he would tell you these stories and just that would just captivate you. And this guy lost over 2,000 friends because of the AIDS virus. And the fact that he was still filled with such hope and such joy. And, you know, if I lost that many friends, man, I don't know if I'd be... I mean, God, I was scared to adopt cats because I'm like, they're going to die one day. let alone if I lost 2,000 of my friends. And this guy, he still had hope because he still talks to people every day. He sees young people who now are engaged in a different fight.
Exactly.
But still a fight. And I think the key is you can't be a nihilist. It's really easy to be a nihilist.
It's so easy. And it's so easy for liberals to become the depressing, you know, downer in the room.
Oh, Allison and I, whenever we have progressives, like, criticize us for making a joke, we have something we just call the progressive groan, where every time you say something happy and a progressive's like, wait a second, we're just like, oh, I know. But
we got,
you
We got to go to break. I'm sorry.
You got to be positive.
Jamie Kilstein of Citizen Radio, thank you for joining us. I hope you'll come back again.
Yes.
I'm John Fugelsang. We'll be right back on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph all week, live from New York City, bringing you some of New York's favorite political comics and most brilliant deviant minds. Joined, as always, in the L.A. Bureau by Mr. Chris Lavoie.
Hola.
Great to have you here. Thanks for cheating on your vacation.
Hey, no problem. No, I won't be here tomorrow or the rest of the week, though. That would be Tony. I know.
Well, we love Tony, and when Tony acknowledges my questions, he's very supportive.
That's when he's awake.
I'm very excited about this next guest. We're still going to be taking your calls at 1-800-STEPH-12. I know a couple of guys are on hold who've been waiting a while. We will get to you. But I want to introduce our next in-studio guest here in New York. Kareth Foster is one of my favorite comedians. You might know, I guess you know her best because she was Don Imus' co-host for a couple of years after he went away and then came back. And a lot of people were really surprised after Don Imus went away, for the reasons he went away, that when he came back, he hired a beautiful, brilliant, hilarious African-American comedian as his sidekick.
Yes, I came in after Nappygate.
You're
welcome,
yes.
America.
Well, you know who was the first person to fill in for him on MSNBC after he left?
Yeah, that's right. On the MSNBC TV show he had after he left was?
Stephanie Miller.
Stephanie Miller and crew.
Oh, yeah.
When the radio show came back, now, of course, let me just preface this by saying when Don Imus went away, I thought that he was dismissed unfairly. I thought what he said was offensive, but not on a racial level. I didn't think that saying nappy-headed was a racist thing. Saying hose was a sexist thing. And I took offense, because nappy-headed is just, it's an expression that people use all the time, and I guess if a white person uses it, maybe it's evil, but I was more offended that these were women on a collegiate basketball team who were athletes and scholars, and he called them hose. And I thought, why are we outraged on a racial level more than a sexist level?
I think it should have been outrage on both levels.
Okay.
Because nobody white says nappy headed. Most people didn't even know what nappy. Nobody knows what nappy means. In Britain, you know, they thought he was calling them diaper heads.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're right.
You know.
Never thought of that.
In this country, it's a totally different context, and it has to do. You know, I come in, you know, today rocking my Angela Davis fro for you.
Yes. For those who don't know, New York City is where humidity. It was God's way of making 80s hair come back. Because right now I look like Ted Koppel, like in 87.
I still to this day, I do not believe that what he did was malicious in intent.
It wasn't.
I think he's an old white guy trying to be hip.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe that.
I think so, too.
Now, I think he said other things that are way more controversial,
mm-hmm.
way more racist, way more sexist.
But no one minded that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It was a very slow news day, and it got picked up, and, you know, and then I was kind of able to come in. But I just want to say what a pleasure it is doing radio with someone who is kind and funny and nice to look at.
Who are you speaking
of? That's
a
change. I'm talking about you.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Well, God bless you and the poor lighting in the studio in Times Square. Well, thank you, Kareth. I've been a fan of yours for such a long time, and I do appreciate your kind words. I was curious, and I'm not going to make this whole thing about Imus,
mm-hmm,
but when I have one more question. When you first came on, was there a sense that you were being hired as damage control, that he brings in a beautiful black woman to be by his side? After he had offended all the beautiful black women of America.
Let's just say this. I don't think it was an accident.
Okay. It was between you you and Larry the Cable Guy,
exactly.
And you just eked out.
And I had boobs.
How was your experience working with him?
You know, my first year was awesome. It was fantastic. I was kind of like the golden child. But then later on, it kind of, you know, I think he got really comfortable and wanted to go back into his old ways, and I don't really think that I fit his mold or his style.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was a little too nice. Which I never thought you could, you know, have a problem being a nice person, but apparently.
Yeah, I don't consider Imus right-wing per se. I think that Imus likes to be a provocateur, and I think that there's a reason why Democrats and Republicans alike love to go on his show. But I get asked to go co-host with these right-wing guys a lot, mm-hmm. and I get asked to go do shows with Jay Severin or other people, and I find that whenever I do it, what they want is for me to fight the guy.
They want
the lefty and the righty fighting, because people who have no imagination think that's entertaining.
They want Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
Yeah, they want toxic... you know, Yak Fest, and mm-hmm. I don't think people really go for that. I think people want to hear entertaining radio, in spite of what I do here, and I don't think they want to hear just more nasty nihilism.
No, I don't think they do either, and I still have people who will call me, like, send me emails and say, Kareth, I missed you so much on the show, you were so refreshing. And I think that was part of it, too. I think when an ego that large is involved, and you're taking some of that attention away,
mm-hmm.
Even though, you know, this man is a multi-millionaire many times over and has had success for decades, there's still insecurities that I was kind of shocked to see, but...
Yeah.
That's what happens.
Well, I mean, since then, you've done so many things. You've been on Comedy Central's Premium Blend. You were on Today's Show and Last Comic Standing. You've done a gazillion of those VH1 shows that I think that we've all done our time in the salt mines of Viacom. And also, you did a crowd warm-up for Oprah.
I did. Yeah. And I'm currently trying to talk with them about doing some comedy stuff on the network.
Have you been able to get a VP who stays there for more than two weeks in a row?
That's the thing. I have a VP who loves me, but the COO, I guess it was, who was there for 15 minutes, she didn't like what we did. And so now someone else new is there. So I'm like, okay, we're still safe. We still have a lifeboat. We can do this.
Yeah,
Let's make it happen.
I try to just memorize all the assistants when I go into Oprah's network because I know that the VPs might not be there next week. That's been my experience so far. But I think of that network as great real estate. I'm a big fan of Oprah's Sirius Satellite channel, and I do think that great stuff will happen at that channel when it finds its way.
Absolutely. Once they get their stuff together, absolutely, no question.
So let me shift to politics, Kareth Bosser. And I'm going to play the race card here early on because I'm crass. Do you, as an African-American, find that people gravitate to you for opinions on Obama?
You know, it's funny. I was at a party this past weekend, and I was literally the only Gentile there. Like everybody, and this is a very dear friend of mine in New Jersey, and you know, it's kind of a networking thing.
Right.
And I didn't realize it was her boyfriend at the time, and the party was wrapping up. There's four of us there. And I kind of felt like because I was putting food away because, you know, Jews, they make you take all the food home because they love to feed you. And
Catholics, too.
Yeah.
My dad could have fed Ethiopia. My dad would have been like, Baba Tunde, where are you going? Take some of the veal for your village. For the village.
So I'm putting my fruit in my little bag, and all of a sudden her boyfriend starts saying, well, I can't wait till we get the next guy in because, you know, the guy we got in now, you know, he's a Muslim, pretended to be a Christian. And
You're kidding me.
And I'm standing there, and I'm like, I felt like I was in The Help, right? Like, nobody would. I think it really wasn't there. At least they were not acknowledging me.
Well, you're the girl.
But there was a woman and a man, also Jewish, sitting there, and the woman goes, like, whoa. She goes, I thought we had more in common than that. Like, I've never heard anybody say that like that that wasn't on Fox News.
Right.
Or at a Tea Party.
But the Caucasian woman recoiled at this.
Yeah. No, everybody else was like, whoa, where did this come from?
Yeah.
And he's like, he hasn't done anything. And the other guy was like, well, he has more Jewish people in his cabinet than Bush ever did.
Mm-hmm.
And the other guy was like, well, Bush was a friend of the Jews. Bush was a friend of Israel. And I'm like, yeah, Bush also wants Armageddon to get here tomorrow.
Yeah, Bush is not a friend of Israel. Here's the big lie about that a lot of the AIPAC fans don't know. A lot of these fundamentalist Christians are supporting Israel for one reason. They want it to be destroyed when the rapture comes. The rapture, which has no basis in scripture. The rapture was coined by a British clergyman in the 1800s, so it's like Bible fan fiction. You know, it's like at least The Godfather 3 was made by the guys who made Godfather 1 and 2. The rapture is just completely like a spin-off of a sequel of a remake of the Bible. It's got no basis in scripture. The whole book of Revelation is a guy named John, not the Apostle John, another guy named John, tripping his face off on tainted shrooms in a cave. And the one part of the book of Revelation they don't want to acknowledge is the book of Revelation is where it says Jesus was brown. And the people who want to take Revelations literally mm-hmm. want to ignore that part. They want to ignore all the teachings of Jesus, but believe the psychotic ravings of this guy who's essentially writing a Pink Floyd album.
It's unbelievable. And what's crazy is I even have some people like this in my family. Like, I have an uncle who, unfortunately, is named Tom.
Uncle Tom. I'm going to defend Uncle Tom. Uncle Tom is one of the greatest figures in the history of literature. Uncle Tom is like a Gandhi figure to me. Uncle Tom is a guy who's mocked by people for being subservient, but he wasn't. Uncle Tom's defining characteristic is his faith. Before they kill him, he says, "Into thy hands I commend my spirit." He's a man who has so much faith in God and in the goodness and love of God that he is able to get through the oppression of his lifetime. The best part of that whole book is when a white character says, "God's curse on slavery." It's an incredibly political, powerful book. It does kind of suck your black uncle's name, Tom.
Yeah, it does. It does.
I'll give him a pep talk on it.
But he's an extreme conservative. Which is, I mean, he literally, I mean, the man wouldn't even apply lotion liberally. He's just not. And so it's just, you know, so I've got these two sides.
And there
are
black conservatives. They tend to be middle-aged men with impacted colons, but there are black conservatives.
They do. So, yeah, it's kind of, you know, I have these two sides to my family. Like, half of us are straight off the Cosby Show, we're huxtabalicious, and the other side is from, you know, the cast of the movie Pootie Tang. So it's like, I kind of get to pick and choose. So, yeah, no, I do find it interesting when I get asked political opinions. And, you know, I have often been accused of not being black enough. You know,
believe it or not.
I know. I believe that about you, John.
Because I have the vitiligo, so I'm not black enough. I had all my pigment removed in Sweden. But go on.
I like to define myself as this. I'm not black enough to have a baby daddy, but I am black enough to still be glad Obama's president. So I fall in somewhere.
Right on. Well, I'm white enough for the same thing. Yeah. But it is incredible. I mean, how condescending the views are towards race and towards the whole Islamic thing. There was a recent poll that showed that a majority of Iowa Republicans still don't believe the president was born in this country. That's after the birth certificate came out. The greatest threat to your freedom is not foreign terrorists. It's domestic morons. And again, the worst thing he could be is a Muslim.
100%.
When John McCain told that woman in his campaign audience he's not a Muslim, he was booed for saying so. Booed by his own supporters for saying he's not Muslim. Muslim is the worst thing you can possibly be.
Which is insane.
And the same people who think he's a Muslim are the ones who thought Bush was a Christian. The ones who think kill a lot of sinners and as governor of Texas with the death penalty. Mm-hmm. That's Christian.
Oh, yeah, that's great. That's
Let's go invade another country. Sure, forgive us our trespasses as we trespass against those we think might trespass against us. Torture, the death penalty, illegal war, defunding the poor. The fundamentalist Christians are the ones they think Jesus wants you to help the poor by defunding any programs that might help the poor and redistribute the wealth up to the upper 2%. They're the opposite of Christians on every level, but they demonize Muslims.
Absolutely. Well, I already have an exit strategy in place. My fiancé is a foreigner, and he's the only person who is allowed to bitch about politics and not vote because he's not a naturalized citizen yet.
Mm-hmm.
So he does have taxation without representation because he has to pay taxes on his business and stuff. And so we've decided that if by chance Rick Perry gets elected or Bachman or whoever, we will either be moving to Australia or England.
Is your fiancé Australian?
He is.
Okay.
He is.
White guy?
So, yes. Yeah.
So how do you guys in the age of Obama handle having an interracial marriage?
Well,
actually, we do have to take a break. I want to ask a deeply personal question about your relationship I have no business asking. Kareth Foster is our guest. I'm John Fieglesang on the Stephanie Miller Show. We got lots more coming up, including Tina Dupuy of Crooks and Liars. Don't go away.
God, it was terrible. Hilarious.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fieglesang, filling in for Steph all week, along with Kareth Foster, comedian extraordinaire here in New York City, and Chris Lavoie in L.A. We are your bi show, or maybe you're just confused.
Yeah.
Kareth, I want to get back to you, but first, let's go to the phones. Chris, is Vince still on the hold from Memphis?
Yeah, Vince in Memphis. Hey.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi,
you
Vince.
Know what? We can. How you doing, guys?
Word.
Yeah, we can talk about. Well, I'm doing fine. How about yourself?
I'm happy you're here, man.
Oh, I'm always happy. Hey, but we can talk about the Tea Party, the racism here. But let me tell you something. Obama is his own worst enemy. What he doesn't seem to understand is there's only one basic rule about the Tea Party. There's two things that they don't like. They don't like to be called racist. And the second thing is they don't like black people.
Well, now, okay, hang on one second. I will take issue with one thing you just said, Vince. I think that the Tea Party and the Republican Party in general likes black people just fine if they talk and dress and vote like we do. Wouldn't you agree? They got no problem with Alan West.
Yeah, that's right. As long as black people stay in their places, look, never call a Tea Party person. You will never hear this. A Tea Party person, you will never hear a Tea Party person call, saying the N-word. You would never. I don't think you ever heard a Tea Party person say the N-word, and you'll never hear him say it. The N-word, of course, is neighbor. So you would never hear that.
Well, you know, again, my thing with the Tea Party is they claim to be so patriotic, but they hate so many Americans. What's that about, Vince?
Well, let me tell you. I'll tell you what it's about. You ask, and I'll tell you. And this
I'm
is
asking.
Where Obama. This is where Obama goes wrong. Okay, the whole basis of their ideological stance, the whole basis of, the, of their psychosis is based in the fact that they don't want to see this different guy that looks different from anything else they've seen in office. When did the Tea Party start?
Mm-hmm.
They started right after the election.
Mm-hmm.
Am I correct?
Yeah. You are correct, but let me ask you a question, though. And based on your accent, I'm guessing you're Italian?
But, you got it, man.
All right.
Here's Sicily, man.
Here's the thing, Vince. Do you think if this was a Caucasian president, they'd be going at him any less? Do you remember what Bill Clinton went through? Do you remember how Bill Clinton was accused of murder by Rush Limbaugh and Jerry Falwell? Do you remember how they impeached Bill Clinton for his sex life? Do you think they actually shut down the government on Bill Clinton? Why do you think that they're going, if this guy could be paler than an albino mime and they would still be going after him?
Yeah, but they go after him in a different way. They go out, they went after Clinton systematically to try to hurt him, not to try to personally disgrace him.
Mm-hmm.
They said, like let's say for example, you're out on the street. If somebody wants, if they can't physically harm you, physically, they'll try to mentally get somebody
right.
up against
mm-hmm.
you by saying, oh yeah, this guy's crap. He sucks. He can't. Don't hire this guy. See, that's just giving them a bad resume. But with Obama, they're saying, oh, look, you don't want to hire this guy. He doesn't look like you.
He's the other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he doesn't look like you. He doesn't act like you. And then people buy into that.
You're exactly right.
What's the problem is Obama bought into it, too. Obama's presidency is analogous to a train or any transportation vehicle, for that matter, going down a specific route, but a specific route of prosperity, getting the nation together, no red or blue states, just one America. But he got sidetracked somehow. And what he says is, hey, look, the train people say, I'm going to take this train to your little small town. And the people in the small town says, no, we don't want it. We don't care if it's going to create more jobs. We don't. It just looks funny. We don't want that train. And Obama says, oh, okay, well, I'm going to put it in there anyway. And they don't want him. They do not want him. And until he addresses that fact, that they really don't want him because they can't handle a different-looking person in the office. And I'll say this to conclude this point.
Okay.
What is racism? See, the problem is that Cheney was just on this weekend talking about, and he had Dick Gregory.
It's Meet the Press with Dick Gregory. Drink your 8 glasses of water, people.
David Gergis, I'm sorry. He was saying,
big
he's not a racist. Look, let me define what a racist is. See,
please.
People think that if you're not spitting on a black person or calling the other N-word or setting out dogs on them, then you must not be a racist.
Well that's a bigot. That's the difference between a racist and a bigot, right? A bigot's just a guy who hates outright, correct?
Good.
Racism is more institutionalized.
Mm-hmm.
It's institutionalized. So we need to, so Obama, until he addresses this institutionalized racism, his poll numbers will never go up. And that's just my opinion. What do you think about that?
I think, first, I think we have to go to a break, Vince, so I thank you very much for the call. But I do agree, you know, and Kareth.
He's right on. He's absolutely right on. But there was no way he could really address that initially because he'd be the angry black man.
Okay, we're going to talk about race when we come back. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fiegelsang. Taking your calls at 1-800-STEPH-12.
Stephanie Miller.
Come on, let's go drink till we can't feel feelings anymore.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, joining you from New York with Kareth Foster, and Chris Lavoy is overseas in L.A., many miles away.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny. The same people who think Obama is really a Muslim also think Rick Perry is really a Christian.
Hey.
I will get to that, but first I want to bring up Tina Dupuy, because Tina is the managing editor of CrooksandLiars.com, and that's special on its own. But what's even more special is the one and only Shano, the official promo maker of the Stephanie Miller Show, has given us for this interview. And this interview, only funny and smart, I want to bring on Tina Dupuy, managing editor of CrooksandLiars.com.
I'm a politician, which means I'm a crook and a liar.
Tina Dupuy is brilliant. She's funny. She's a terrific writer.
Tina does everything, and I just love her already.
Welcome, Tina Dupuy. How do you like your jingle?
That's fantastic.
You are made, woman. You are made now. See, I told you. You know, Shano does a terrific internet radio show called Funked in the Head, which all y'all who care about good radio and politics should listen to. And I told Shano I would deliver Tina Dupuy to his show, and I did. So he made us a jingle.
That is fantastic.
Wonderful. Tina, if that doesn't help you survive being at the Reagan Library in person for the GOP debate on Wednesday night, having your own jingle, I don't know what will. Are you nervous about going to the library tomorrow?
Only if I wear red, and then I'll apparently look like a Republican politician. I think, you know, I think the Republicans eat better than the Democrats. I've gone to a lot of these Democrat events, and, you know, they don't really bring it when it comes to the food, and, like, their chairs are uncomfortable. Clinton notoriously had the press corps in the men's bathroom, at the filing room. So I think the Republicans really kind of know how to treat the press, as it were. So,
yeah, they do. And win elections. They're good at that, too.
Yeah, right. I'm expecting Manny Petty's. I mean, I'm really expecting them to bring it to members of the media.
Tina, I have to ask you if you had any thoughts on Jimmy Hoffa's speech yesterday, where he called for people to do the unholy violent act of voting.
Yeah, I saw that there was a Tea Party group that condemned him on language.
Mm-hmm.
Which they have managed to murder. So
yes.
I thought that was interesting.
That's like having the Kardashians condemn you for being tacky.
Right. They're like, you know what? I just think you're kind of shallow.
You're so materialistic. Oh, my God. And why do you always make every sentence sound like a question? Yeah, that's like having Linda Tripp attack you for being a bad friend. But I do want to know, did you have a good Labor Day, and do you have any thoughts on labor and where it stands now?
I had a fantastic Labor Day. I did the all-American thing of working on Labor Day. Labor right now, I mean, I've been following this for the past year. You know, I think that what is really going to bring the Democrats together, and we've talked about this on this show, I think that the Democrats have always kind of suffered from microcosmism, you know, and everybody wants their little pet project to be solved before anybody can do anything, and it's been stifling to the Democrats for a couple of decades now. I think that unions quite literally can bring us together, because it is all about labor, it's about jobs, it's about the middle class, and it's about being able to work and make a living, which is a novel thing these days.
Mm-hmm.
Because now we're having, you know, I mean, Rick Perry talks about all these jobs he created. Well, they're minimum wage jobs. You can, and the minimum wage hasn't been raised in a very long time. You cannot support a family working on minimum
wage.
All
right, that's why we're going to get rid of minimum wage, because minimum wage is unconstitutional. And plus, Rick Perry's brought a lot of great, he's brought so many great jobs to Texas. I work three right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that the union issue is actually something that the Democrats can and should rally around.
I think you're exactly right, and I'd like to see the Democrats do it. I mean, I was inspired by Hoffa's speech yesterday, and I think that just as if Obama came to the people and said, we're going to raise taxes 5% on millionaires for 5 years, millionaires only for 5 years, and we'll grade it so people make $10 million a year, pay even more. If Obama came with a tax increase plan like that, he could bring it to the Republican base and win. 81% of Americans want the rich to be taxed more to help save this economy. That's the root of your deficit. Social Security doesn't do a thing to the deficit. It's all these tax cuts and these wars.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and you're assuming that the Republican base is different than the Republican incumbents. You know, they're the ones that are taking the hard line with this. They don't care about polls. They don't care about what's popular. They don't care if they're, at least in the House, they don't care if they're reelected. They just want to do nothing. I mean, we're basically playing chicken with nihilists.
Playing chicken with nihilists, yes, as dark as that sounds. Well, you know, Michelle Bachmann's campaign manager just dropped out this week, Ed Rollins, and so things are looking bad for comedians' last great hope. Do you think that this whole thing is it Perry's to blow at this point?
You know, like, the thing is, you know, comparatively, like, when was Michelle Bachmann ever doing well? You know, I mean, what
in fundraising she was.
John Wayne Gacy or congratulated the Elvis Presley on the day that he died.
Yeah, I know, but being dumb helps you with some voters, okay? Telling them what they want to hear and waving a flag and a Bible and talking about children will get you plenty of voters. And Michelle Bachmann was exquisitely intelligent at fundraising.
Right. I mean, well, you could take a German Shepherd, put a necktie on him, say he's for American family values, and, you know, 20% of Republicans will vote for him. That doesn't mean that, you know, Michelle had any chance. But this is probably the most interesting thing to happen to her campaign because it was unexpected. For her to have staffing issues at this point, to do a Newt Gingrich kind of, you know, and having a mass, they called it a Newtony when it happened to Newt Gingrich. I thought that was clever.
Yeah.
That was the last that we thought that she would implode, just what she said would implode her campaign instead of, her staff leaving. But yeah, no, it's Perry's next to kind of implode. This is what
I think so?
For a
you,
while. He's going to, as soon as he starts talking, to a mainstream American public, it's going to go really bad.
I got to tell you, we're doing, you know, as you know, we're doing the Stephanie Miller tour right now, the Sexy Liberal Show, and we're doing it all across the country, and we're getting the greatest audiences, cool liberals everywhere, but the people I talk to are actually scared of Perry. They think that Perry is like George Bush without the fake accent. He's much more likable than Bush. He's dumber than Bush, but that can help. And they think that, you know, a lot of people think that what's going to beat Obama is high gas prices and a high unemployment rate more than anything else, and that it's really, you know, Perry just needs to show up and not drool in public, and he can walk away with the presidency. Are you worried about this, or do you think it's?
Yeah, I see. When you look at Whit Perry, you think George Bush, George Bush, George Bush, and everybody wanted to vote against George Bush. Anybody who was even in the same party as George Bush, and during the last election, we still, the majority of Americans still blame this economy on George Bush, rightfully so. And I think that someone who's kind of a parody of George Bush is not going to vote well. The thing with Texas as a state is that, you know, people are like, oh, he's been in for, you know, this is his third term, so of course he's been vetted. And there's a Texas bubble where all you have to say is that you love Texas and suddenly you get reelected. I mean, it's not the Texas press.
You also
not
have to,
really
you got to kill it. You have to, you're right, but you also have to kill a lot of sinners so the Christians will vote for you.
Yeah, they do it differently down in Texas. But, I wouldn't worry about Perry. I don't worry about Perry. Perry to me, he looks like he's basically, what is it, Gallagher 2?
That's what
he wants. Well, Tina, I'm from Texas, and, we think that we are our own country.
Yeah.
And so the kind of the rule is, well, what I love about Rick Perry is that, you know, he's this great Republican who's about less government, yet he wants us to, you know, vaccine our daughters. Everybody who's a teenager should get the HPV vaccine. That's definitely less government in our lives. Yeah.
That's actually the only thing that I've ever agreed with Rick Perry on, is that
really?
I have a friend right now who's dying of cervical cancer, and I would love for every single woman, every single girl in this nation, in this world, to get vaccinated when they're at junior high age. That would be fantastic. My friend's not yet 40, and we just found out that it metastasized.
It's an incredible killer.
That's the thing that I am on board with Rick Perry about.
Well, hang on one second, Tina.
Everything else, him.
Tina, I love you, but would you support the vaccine if parents had an opt-out clause if they didn't want to get their kids the vaccine?
Would I support it? Well,
yeah
I mean, everyone should have a choice, but I think that it should be available and everyone should get it.
It should be available,
you know,
no question, but...
Because the whole thing is that the argument against it has always been for promiscuity. Well, my friend was raped. And she's dying now as a direct result of being raped. So that's... you know, I know that the reason why Perry did it was for cronyism, but it's actually as a policy. I think that, you know, it, I actually have to agree with him, even though now he's recanted, which I find to be unfortunate.
Why can't they vaccinate boys? Why can't they give boys something?
Well, it's asymptomatic in boys, and our cervixes aren't affected by cervical cancer.
I understand that. But,
it's true, and you know, no one people have a really hard time taking HPV seriously. And again, if it caused, you know, blistering lesions in men more often, maybe they would.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't. And I think, Tina, what we've already noticed is the other GOP candidates, Romney in particular, are trying to find a way to find chinks in the armor on Perry, and they're beginning to latch on to the HPV vaccine mandate in his state, and they're beginning to say this is big government, just what Carruth said, but the Republicans are using that against Perry. Are they going to get any traction on that?
I think there's a lot of other big government issues. I mean, he really is not a fiscal conservative. He did his budget looks like it has a lot of holes in it, and he did a lot of Enron accounting tricks in order to make things add up. I think that there's a lot of things that you can go at Perry as far as him being a social conservative, absolutely, but fiscally he's essentially the opposite of the Tea Party, even though, and the Tea Party has come out, the local Tea Parties in Texas have come out against Perry and saying, you know, you can have him. We don't want him here anymore because he is the inverse of what the Tea Party traditionally has been for smaller government and kind of neutral on the social issues.
And in fairness, Rick Perry thinks America is the most beautiful country ever that Texas might have to secede from. can a guy talk about secession and be taken seriously?
I mean, look, they have their own grid, so they could actually leave. And the Alamo, if for those of you in Texas, the Alamo was not an American battle. That was Texas. Texas did that on their own. So they could very likely secede and be fine. During the last election, we had a secessionist.
That's true.
Sarah Palin's husband was a well-documented secessionist. And,
yes, a secessionist married to a recessionist.
During the election.
But isn't there a Supreme Court case, I think, that was decided in the late 1800s that said that Texas was forbidden from seceding from the Union? I think I read that somewhere. So Rick Perry's wrong even when he says Texas wants to secede.
Chris Lavoie, you just once stumped the lefties. Tina Dupuis, I love Crooks and Liars, and I love you, and I love the two of you together. And I hope you'll come back later in the week and tell us what you see at the big GOP debate tomorrow night.
Oh, it's going to be fun. Thanks for having me.
Right on. Tina Dupuis is managing editor of Crooks and Liars at crooksandliars.com. Check it out. I'm John Fiegel saying we'll be back with lots more in just a moment.
Just stay on this frequency. We'll be right with you. Just stay on this frequency.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Well, somebody told me.
Stephanie Miller.
Oh, the Killers, the first album. Make more like that, guys. Stop trying to be Springsteen and go back to making 80s music. Am I right?
I think they gave up.
Oh, why, Killers? Why try to be Springsteen? You are not human or dancer. You're a rock band. Act like it. I'm John Fiegelsang. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. And that's a great song, Chris. Thanks
that
for
is a great song, but are we human or are we dancer is grammatically incorrect. And that's what drives me crazy about that song.
Yeah, I mean, you know, When You Were Young, when their second album's a great song, and that's the Springsteen song, and it really works, but the rest of it, that be Morrissey. Stop trying to be that. Okay,
yeah.
Killers have a great cover of Morrissey's Why Don't You Find Out for Yourself, rock nerds.
Wow,
Hal's going to be here tomorrow to help me out with my metal trivia, but for now I'll give you the rock trivia. I'm John Fiegelsang here with Carruth Foster in New York, Chris Lavoie. In the waning moments of the Stephanie Miller Show, I want to say the Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Tour is doing something we've never done before. Next Saturday, the 17th, in East Lansing, Michigan, we are doing a fundraiser for the Democratic Party. Now, I am not a Democrat. The only thing I hate about Republicans is that they keep forcing me to vote for Democrats. I have a lot of problems with the Democratic Party, but I admire a lot of them very much. Never wanted to join the party, and so I'm getting myself psyched up to do my first Democratic Party fundraiser. Do we have a promo for that show, Chris?
Yes, we do.
After cracking up the Queen of Soul in Detroit, the Queen of Talk Radio is returning to Michigan.
Another night in Michigan.
The Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Show is proud to announce their return engagement to support the Clinton County Democratic Party.
This calls for a sexy party.
On September 17th at the Wharton Center in East Lansing, the Sexy Liberal crew is coming back to you, Michigan. John Fugelsang, the divine heretic of political humor. Hal Sparks, rebel rocker and Hollywood rabble rouser. And Stephanie Miller, our favorite happy clappy Democratic cheerleader.
The whole thing sounds a darn Democrat.
Get your tickets at thewhartoncenter.com or by calling 1-800-WHARTON. That's 1-800-942-7866. That's the Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Show at the Wharton Center on September 17th. Spartans of Michigan, yes, we can again. Because
this is Sparta!
Yeah!
That is the nuttiest trailer the Democratic Party's ever had. But you know why I wanted to do it is because of Labor Day. I mean, it was JFK who said, through collective bargaining and grievance procedures, unions have brought justice and democracy to the shop floor. Plato told Aristotle that no one should make more than 5 times the pay of the lowest member of society. J.P. Morgan said no more than 20 times. Now it's 500 times. Mm-hmm. And I think Michigan is ground zero, along with Wisconsin, for the labor movement in this country. I'm so proud to be a part of this tour, aside from the fact that I'm working with really funny people. Stephen Haller, just hilarious, and raised my game comedically. But also that we are going to raise money for the Democratic Party in a part of our country where we need them to do the work they're trying to do and safely. Are you a Democrat, Kareth?
I consider myself a social democrat.
Okay, right on, right on. I'm independent all the way, but you know, it's not a hard choice for me in this current climate. And I think that, you know what, folks, and tell this to all your right-wing loved ones, and we love our Republican friends, but, you know, the 40-hour work week, the minimum wage, family leave, health insurance, Social Security, Medicare, retirement plans, thank a union thug for all of that. Thank a union thug for it. So,
thank you, union thugs.
Thank you. We love our union thugs. They make the world better. In the waning moments before we go, and again, that's next Saturday at East Lansing, Michigan. If you're in Michigan, if you're near Michigan, come to the show at the Wharton Center. It's going to be dynamite. Hal Sparks rejoins our tour. It's going to be really, really hot, and we want to see you there. You'll know that your money is going for a good cause to keep the Republicans from decimating organized labor in the great state of Michigan. But before we go, I do want to ask you, since you are from Texas, Dominionism.
Yeah.
Really quickly, this is Rick Perry's faith. This is Michelle Bachmann's faith.
Yeah.
For the folks out there who don't know much about it, Kareth, can you explain what Dominionism is?
Well, from what I've gathered from, you know, my little bit of research on it, Dominionism is basically where religious Christian fundamentalists are trying to basically pull everybody under one umbrella and take control over all things that influence us, business, media, politics, entertainment, news. And the idea is that once everybody is under this umbrella, then we can have God's way happen and the control will be in the hands of the people who, you know, Jesus wants at the helm. And, you know, as a Christian, as an Episcopalian, which, you know, I am very proud of, I just have issue, because it's not like they're doing it because we want everybody to be one. They're doing it because they want ultimate control.
Exactly, which is the opposite of what Christianity is about. You know, these are politically active conservative Christians who want influence and control over secular civil government.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to use political action, as is their right to do it. They want to get rid of the separation of church and state. They don't believe there ever was one.
Oh, no.
They think that, like, Jefferson was using parentheses, you know.
Funny years, rap years.
little quotation marks when he said that. And their goal is a nation governed by Christians. But here's the thing. That wasn't what Jesus was about, and their agenda has nothing to do with the agenda of Jesus. They don't want to help the poor. They don't want to stop violence. What they want to do is have their way. They want to have more tax cuts for the rich. They want to be able to invade whoever they want. That's American exceptionalism, which is the new manifest destiny. God wants us to do it. We have the bigger guns to prove that God likes us more. Folks, this is not Christianity. It's Christian supremacy.
That's right on.
And the more fundamentalist your religion is, the more you're going to have this kind of denial mechanism. Do you ever notice, Karen? Kareth?
That's right.
You're my white cousin. Do you ever notice, Kareth? The more conservative, the more to the right your religion is, be it Islam, Judaism, Christianity, the more you put down women, the more you despise gay people, the more you think violence is a perfectly useful tool for solving problems, and the more you think other religions are bad and wrong.
Absolutely.
These are the four traits that every religion has in common, the more to the right you go. When our atheists say, oh, organized religion is responsible for all the war and crime. No. Not organized religion.
Yeah.
The vast majority of religious people who are moderates or liberals Christians, Jews, Muslims, they get along just fine.
Exactly.
They're not ruining anybody's day. It's the right-wingers of every religion. And dominionism is the backbone of the campaign fundraising apparatus for Michelle Bachmann and for Rick Perry.
Exactly. And these people, they have a lot of money. These are, I'm not a super political person. In my stand-up, I'm really not. But I'm scared. I'm getting nervous and getting frightened. And, you know, I mean, I appreciate Rick Perry's, you know, praying for rain in Texas. Like, I do believe in prayer.
And what did he get? What did he get? Fire. That's what God gave him, was fire. We're running out of time. I want to thank Karith Foster for being here on the show today. Please follow her on Twitter and Facebook. I'm going to be doing a show this Friday all about religion, a 40-minute religious set at Stand Up New York in New York City. It's going to be filmed for a documentary with five cameras. We'll be talking about that more on the show. It's going to be religious, but it's going to be funny. I'm John Fiegel saying thank you, Chris. We'll be here tomorrow. We got a great show all week. Chris Hayes from MSNBC is joining us. We'll see you here tomorrow morning.